It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. Harry McCracken, the technologizer, is here along with Lisa Schmeiser from the Super Site for Windows. We're all watching to see who the next CEO of Uber will be. Rumor says Meg Whitman's in the running. Should you tip your Uber driver? I don't know. Well, maybe Meg will get a nice tip from all of us. We'll talk about Oreos, both the cookies and the Android, and drones. Is there anything they can't spot? It's all coming up next. Donut drones? Yes, next on TWiT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 629, recorded Sunday, August 27th, 2017. When in doubt, hit the raccoon. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Eero. Never think about Wi-Fi again with Eero's hyper-fast, super-simple Wi-Fi system. And now the second generation Eero is tri-band and twice as fast. For free overnight shipping, visit Eero.com, select overnight shipping at checkout, and enter the code TWIT. And by Carbonite. Keep your business safe this year. Protect your business from ransomware and hacker attacks with automatic cloud backup from Carbonite. Try it free at Carbonite.com and use the offer code TWIT to get two free bonus months if you decide to buy. And by Blue Apron, the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. See what's on the menu this week and get three meals free with your first purchase and free shipping by going to blueapron.com/TWIT. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/TWIT2. It's time for TWIT This Week in Tech, the show where we cover the latest tech news. We've got a great panel here. Returning kind of the panel that was here when I wasn't here last time, Jason Snell brought together an old friend of his, a co-host on The Incomparable, Lisa Schmeiser. She is at, interestingly enough, took Paul Thurrott's job at the Super Site for Windows.
Editor-in-chief. I wouldn't say I took it. I stepped into very big shoes.
He left. Mm-hmm. And months later, you took over.
Like I said, stepped into very big shoes.
There was a gap. Okay? There wasn't. She didn't push him out. No. Anyway, it's great to meet you, Lisa, and have you on here. EIC at Super Site for Windows, and she's also, of course, at The Incomparable. With us also, the Technologizer, and you two know each other, Harry McCracken.
We met a couple months ago.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You were here a couple months ago.
We have a wide circle of people in common, as it turns out.
Yes, many former colleagues who were each other's former colleagues and friends and
IDG
associates.
Borg. Yeah.
And Mark Millian from Bloomberg was scheduled to be here, but Mark says, I can't come today. Mm-hmm. I'll be watching The Wire. He probably has a wire machine in his living room, and he's waiting for the five bell alert.
Yeah.
Remember those? Did you ever work with a teletype?
Five bell alert? No.
Ding, 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 ding. That would mean a presidential, like, mm-hmm. big thing, like a five bell alert. We are all waiting because today the Uber board meets to name a successor to Travis Kalanick. And what's interesting is last week we talked about Jeff Immelt, CEO of GE. Mm-hmm. Former CEO, who was widely expected to take the job. He tweeted this morning at 8:47. Oh, I took it off the screen. I'm not doing it.
There we go.
That's not a flattering picture. I'm going to just say that right now. That's on Recode. And I think Kara Swisher. It was somebody else.
Kara wrote it.
It was Kara. Kara chose it for sure. Mm-hmm. We know Kara.
If you're no longer vying for that job, does that mean you would turn it down? If offered, or?
Well, that's what's interesting, because now the front runner is somebody who has turned it down.
She said mm-hmm. Meg Whitman will not be the next Uber CEO. Mm-hmm.
But it turns out if you read, for instance, the Wall Street Journal, she has met with the board. She met with them yesterday and made a presentation to them. And what Kara is assuming, and I think others are, is that she made some demands. Yeah. I'm sure the Uber board would like a woman CEO, given that a lot of the reasons Travis is gone is because of this rampant sexism and harassment. Yeah. It's the optics of it.
Yeah.
It's been such a kind of a combative company, partly because it had to be in order to succeed in towns where the local government and the taxi commission and the taxi drivers just didn't want Uber to exist. So I think that was kind of part of their startup nature, this kind of pugnacious, we're going to do it anyway. But it did not help that a number of people started to talk about harassment, corporate culture that really was bad for women. And, of course, Susan J. Fowler wrote that blog post earlier this year that really blew the lid off it. Ended up taking down Travis Kalanick. Yeah. Whitman's, after tweeting last month, I'm not going anywhere. Whitman's demands apparently are that, A, Travis be nothing more than a founder. He's on the board right now.
Mm-hmm. And he seems like he is angling to maybe come back someday or... Shadow CEO.
This is worse than Game of Thrones. He's been kind of he's been writing letters to Uber employees saying, maybe you would you kind of like to start a grassroots movement to bring me back?
He said he was going
to
do the Steve Jobs
ask,
thing.
If you have to
but
ask,
remember when he was knocked out, there was as a petition circulated at Uber, and at least 1,000 people signed it saying, no, we can't be Uber without our founder. Founder has a lot of loyalty, I imagine, especially among the people he hired.
I'd be interested to see the breakdown, and this is not in a persecution way. I would be interested to see the breakdown, who signed the petition, what level of employment they're at.
Interesting.
Yeah. I'd also like to see the breakdown, demographically speaking, between men and women.
Do you think there are any women left?
I don't. Well, there's Bozema St. John now, who was a very...
Oh, Bozema is beautiful and wonderful.
Great,
and
strong hire.
She
and
was...
If you take a look at what they're doing now, where they've got the driver-friendly features and the tips, I get the sense that she's behind pushing a lot of these stories out to try to change the Uber narrative to one where we're better for drivers, drivers have more control.
Hire a strong, powerful woman of color to be the front person to say, no, this is not the Uber that you think it is.
Yeah.
She came to our attention first when she was working at Apple, and she was so good.
She's got an agency background because the experience that she had before she came to Apple was she did branding and campaigns for Pepsi, moved into music development, and that contact brought her into Apple's music business. But you're talking about somebody who has decades of professional experience figuring out how to construct a campaign and how to lay down very simple talking points that resonate with people.
I love her Twitter bio. There's nothing more badass than being who you are. I am a force of nature in fierce stilettos, chief brand officer at Uber.
Yeah, no, she lost her husband to cancer a couple of years ago. So she's been doing all of this while also being
a single mom.
Mother.
Oh, my gosh.
And I follow her on both Twitter and Instagram.
I adore her.
Oh, yeah.
She knocked me out at that Apple event. Apple was famous for not having any women on stage. And then all of a sudden they've got Bozema St. John on there. And it was like, wow, who's this?
Yeah.
Let's see more of her.
She was a really strong brand ambassador, and it was a big, I wouldn't call it a big loss for Apple because Apple's good at building a deep bench of talent, but she brought something to Apple that I think they're going to have to work very hard to try and find again. And she's been really proactive with the press with regards to Uber, saying, yes, I'm going to come in. This is a good company. I believe in what it's doing. We're going to take steps to address complaints, and here's where we're going. And I was looking at the TechCrunch story talking about Uber adding more driver-friendly features and hitting 50 million in tips. And some of the talking points in this story from TechCrunch.
50 million sounds like a lot.
Well,
until you realize that that was on $1 billion in rides.
So what they say, so here's the talking point that I have a feeling got drifted out from Uber and put into the story. Is they're like, 50 million in just a few weeks is great because Lyft has had the tip feature for years and only hit 250 million tips this year. So what they're implying is that Uber's users have been responsive to this in a way that Lyft's users are not. And they're also implying that Uber's drivers are getting tips because, they're so great. People have been dying to tip them. This is so great for the drivers.
Which is really kind of misrepresenting it because Uber for years pretended that you didn't have to tip, that the tip implied, I always thought this, it was somehow included.
That was a selling point for the service originally.
Right. No tipping. Yeah. You don't need a tip. And in fact, it was just you weren't tipping. I felt like a jerk when I found out that, no, they're not getting anything.
But I'm still not sure how much you should tip, by the way.
Yeah.
I use Lyft, and they suggest $1 as one option, which
that's
definitely not 20% of any ride I take.
Uber now, for a long time, Uber didn't put it in the app, which meant that you had to have cash to tip, which was,
and it was against the rules, officially.
And not really a good way of supporting it. They actually were ordered by a court to allow the drivers to ask for tips. They were not allowing them to ask for tips.
Yeah.
As soon as that court order happened, the people started putting up little signs in their Uber, some drivers anyway, saying, it's okay to tip me.
Yeah.
I felt terrible, and I over-tipped for the first few months just because I felt so bad that I hadn't been tipping. Yeah. Now it's in the app, and you're right. They suggest $3, just like Lyft, $3 amounts.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's very high compared to what I would normally tip a cab, maybe 25%.
If you take a New York cab, the options they give you are 15%, 25%. 78%.
And it goes up and down depending on the time of day, because
I always overtip cabbies, because I feel like that's a hard job. They're underpaid.
Yeah.
They have to pay, you know, a lot of money, especially Uber drivers, for gas. They have to pay for all the expenses of it. And I always give them a good tip.
The Uber story here is interesting with the, we're empowering you to drive and set your routes and things like that. Because one of the data points I've noticed in my last few Lyft rides is there's an almost adversarial relationship between the driver and the app
Please,
they have to use.
Take this street. Don't go that way.
Yeah. But there was a case where I was coming home from an airport. It was very late at night. My driver couldn't pull up a route on his app. And I said, well, it's because...
I'll tell you.
And I said, well, you've started a pizzeria in Emeryville. So that explains a whole lot right there. And he's like, no, it's the app. The app doesn't know what it's doing. And I was walking him through the steps to get back to my house.
Thank you.
But the whole 35 minutes home, he was just ranting about how awful the app was and how it's unhelpful and how it sends him places he wouldn't want to go. And it was not the first time I've had that experience.
Do you think it was his fault, though, or the app's fault?
It sounds like it was his fault. I think it's, you never discount an end user problem. But what I have noticed is there seems to be more adversarial relationships between the drivers and the tools they're being expected to use.
Every time I take a Lyft or an Uber, I ask the driver. And drivers seem to like driving for a Lyft better, don't they? Or is that just my experience?
They seem to. And a heck of a lot of them drive for both.
Yeah, almost everybody.
And if you ask them, they seem to typically say that Lyft is easier to work with. Although I don't know whether that's still true, given that Uber has been doing more, at least some more driver-friendly stuff lately.
Yeah.
One of our producers, as a experiment in reporting, applied for a job at Uber to drive and was surprised that they never asked to inspect his car. They never asked to even see his car. It was a pretty easy process becoming an Uber driver. Not a lot of background checks and all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. Lyft apparently is a little more assiduous about looking at the car, inspecting the car, and making sure the car is safe.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're going to probably... So Mark Millian stayed home to cover the accession of perhaps Meg Whitman to CEO at Uber. We will keep an eye on that and let you know if a decision is made. The board is meeting right now. Apparently, Whitman met with them yesterday and said, Travis can't be on the board. He can't be breathing down my neck. He will have a role as a founder. I'll consult him. She also, what were the other conditions? You had that article up, Karsten, earlier. I'm just going to see if I can find the other conditions. She was pretty clear that she was willing. It sounded like she was clear that she was willing to do it if Uber would agree to go along with it. Kara Swisher predicted before the tweet that Meltwood withdrew himself. Here's the Kara. Kara's been the cover. She's replaced her Yahoo scoops with Uber scoops.
Well, Yahoo at this point is.
Yeah, when are you going to write about Yahoo? She says that, Kara writes, let's just say Whitman's driving the car, deciding on the route, not paying for the gas. She apparently wants a lot of control over, she wants a new board and wide latitude over who she hires.
Yeah.
But you would ask for that, especially if you were coming into a fairly challenging role.
If the problem is institutional culture from the top on down, then you're going to say, I'm not walking into this house unless I have an ironclad guarantee to clean it as I see fit and then fill it up again as I see fit. You're not going to come in and say, oh, everybody here, that's just fine. Sure, I'll just be your CEO.
Swisher also says Whitman was worried about other undiscovered problems. And that's a reasonable thing to worry about because, for a while, there was a story every week about stuff.
Apparently, there is a third candidate, though, and
who's that?
Kara, at least, has not identified yet, as the last time I checked. So,
a woman or a man? I think a man.
I think it was a guy, yes.
Yeah. So, Meg Whitman is not necessarily considered a great CEO. She was CEO at eBay, right, for a while.
She was CEO at eBay from the time it was tiny until it became a huge
Practically
company.
Practically a founder.
Almost. Not quite.
And then went to HP. I'm looking at you, Harry. How good a CEO is Meg Whitman?
eBay is still a pretty impressive story overall, I think.
She built a good company.
She turned something tiny into something huge, which is one of the few internet companies from 20 years ago that still matters.
cough,
Yahoo,
cough, cough.
With HP, I mean...
She ran for president in 2008.
Yeah. No, she ran for governor. She was the...
Oh, that's right, governor.
She was the Republican nominee governor. For governor
that's
of California.
Right. I'm sorry, yes. And so she lost to Jerry Brown.
During her HP tenure, wasn't she responsible for overseeing the split of the company into services and hardware?
And she stayed...
She took over a very troubled company.
Yeah. Her predecessor,
Leo Apotheker, had really done some terrible things, including acquire a company that had really no value at all and spending billions for it. That was a huge flop. And so I think you could say she turned around HP. The split was a success, too, I would be willing to say.
Yeah, I mean, the last few years of HP have been the least disaster HP years. Yeah.
Okay, that, I call that a success.
Because they had so many problems and so many CEOs.
Yeah.
Before that.
Yeah, it was a good market position, too, to explicitly separate out services from hardware because she recognized at a pretty crucial point that hardware was going to be a commodity spend from now on, whereas services can be a continuous revenue flow if you do it right. So it was smart to isolate
offload
out.
That.
Yeah, it was smart to isolate out two different models and say, okay, let's see how to grow revenue in two different ways in two different companies.
You wonder, I mean, really, if that wasn't the fallout of the HP-Compaq merger, which was considered one of the worst mergers in technology of all time.
Yeah, I mean, well, they doubled down on PCs in 2001.
That was not under her, by the way.
No. Yeah. That was under Carly Fiorina, who's another...
Another candidate
HP
for president.
Person who,
that's who I was confusing
was
with her.
The senatorial... nominee and then ran for president. They doubled down on PCs, which even if it made sense at the time, it only made sense for a little while. And the closer we got to the smartphone era, the less that was valuable.
The irony is that the HP's PC division is knocking it out of the park in the last 2 years. The designs and the quality have been stellar, a big improvement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they're the most important company in a troubled industry, essentially, in an industry which is probably destined to shrink a little bit. And years ago, I mean, HP, they did phones, they bought Palm, they made TVs, they did all kinds of consumer electronics, most of which fell by the wayside rather quickly.
Didn't they do a smart kitchen appliance way back in the 80s? They tried a prototype of something like
probably.
That?
Probably.
Yeah.
I remember the Audrey. Was that one of theirs?
Yes. Was it there?
Audrey was, I want to say, 3Com.
Cisco? Yeah, it was 3Com that was acquired by Cisco.
They're all those things.
Yeah.
You should have a graveyard behind you of all
I do. You should see my office. You haven't seen my office. The graveyard is behind me. I have everything. I don't have
the
an Audrey.
Companies of booze
if anybody
packs.
Wants to send me an Audrey.
I'm still not sure if the Audrey ever actually shipped or not. But
Basically, the Echo Home is the modern-day Audrey, and it does everything 10 times better. So you actually, if I look at her tenure, she started at eBay when it had 30 employees, a revenue of $4 million. She took it to 15,000 employees and $8 billion. In revenue. She was a huge success, I think it's safe to say, at eBay. I think she took over a troubled HP, and if not turned it around, at least made it viable. So I think she's probably a very good candidate to do something. And she's my age, she's 60, so it's not likely she would have a long tenure at Uber.
But the argument is that she's both a growth artist and a turnaround artist.
Yeah,
so
she's got the
Uber.
Skills. Yeah.
And she's a tough cookie, which I think they need right now.
She stepped down as chairwoman of the board of directors at HP in July, but she's still the CEO of HP Enterprise. So she would have to leave HP to do this. Although I am fully committed to HP Enterprise and plan to remain the company's CEO. We have a lot of work to do. I'm not going anywhere. It's a lot like the people who protest. I'm like Mark Zuckerberg. I'm not running for president. I like, until they do.
So how much of this messaging is to preserve stock prices or to keep investors
Precisely.
Happy?
Well, the Uber transition is all about stock price.
Because their valuation.
Or not stock price because they're not public, but
valuation.
Investors and valuation. I mean, there's a lot of money been sunk into Uber. And frankly, I have to say, if I were thinking about taking over Uber, I'd be more concerned not so much about sexual harassment and the bro culture, but about runway. Because Uber right now subsidizes every ride to the tune of 59%. 41% is what you pay. The rest comes out of Uber. In effect, they're spending billions of dollars to lose billions of dollars. And I don't know, they have a lot of money, they've raised a lot of money, but I don't know how much runway they have. It can't be more than a few years. At some point, they're either going to have to go back to investors and say, that $100 billion you gave us, can we have more? Or they're going to run out of time. Mm-hmm. There is a light at the end of the tunnel. It's self-driving cars. One of the ways they get this price, they can't raise prices. People use Uber because it's cheaper. But they can eliminate one of the big costs, which is drivers. And I know they're working very hard on self-driving cars. In fact, I would guess that really the most of the investment money is not all about replacing taxi cabs. It's all about replacing drivers.
If there's only a few years of runway, though, are you going to be able to pull together the tech ecosystem and get through regulatory hurdles?
Yeah.
And more importantly, land with users who are totally fine with being driven around by a robot.
You got to get governments to agree to this.
Yeah. They've also had troubles with self-driving cars, too, because they have this lawsuit with Waymo.
Because the other thing is that there was an article this past week on Bloomberg talking about how a lot of people who are working on self-driving cars have finally realized that the National Transit Safety Board has a vested interest in what the safety regulations for these cars look like. And they are only now beginning to reckon with the scope of all of the safety features that are going to have to be regulated and what the acceptable parameters for safety for every one of those are going to be. It's not going to be a speedy process.
I want to talk in just a second. The Germans have made a rules for self-driving cars. I want to talk about that in just a second, and we'll see if we agree. And I am watching. I'm monitoring Twitter to see. We'll have the news when the word comes out. It may not come out during the show, but I'm told that the board is meeting right now to decide.
And supposedly they're not planning to announce that to employees until
so it won't be public
next week.
Yeah.
All right.
Although it seems like there's a good chance.
I have a feeling Kara Swisher has a bug in there.
The timing? Why the timing is until next week?
That's a good question.
No, it doesn't seem realistic, probably.
You're not going to keep a lid on it that long. Yeah. So this is Kara's tweet from 2 hours ago. Uber board meeting to pick, but Whitman still has not gotten all the things she wants to be CEO. Kara says, my bet she will get what she wants. So that's maybe what the board is deciding right now, is do we give her all of that? How important is it to maintain a solid board and to keep Travis happy compared to keeping the investors happy? One of the reasons this is really important and Travis had to step down is big investors, big institutional investors like Fidelity were saying, we're not sure we want to be in this company anymore.
He's getting in trouble with Benchmark.
Benchmark, of course.
With other VCs.
Yep. This is tough. All right, we're going to take a break. This is going to be a breaking story we'll continue to cover. And I actually have a tweet deck search filter on Uber CEO, and it's actually pretty funny. It's interesting to watch. I'm thrilled to have you both here, and Mark Millian Mark's doing what we're doing, which is watching this. Twitter's the place where you would watch this, right? Where else would you go nowadays to keep an eye on breaking news? You watch it on Twitter, right? So as much as I diss Twitter, I think it is still has some significant value, at least for covering tech news stories. Great to have Lisa Schmeiser here. She's editor-in-chief of the Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com. Harry McCracken, the Technologizer. And what is your title now at your technology editor?
Technology editor for Fast Company.
Yeah, nice. Our show today brought to you by a technology I use and love and have been getting more thrilled with at all times. It's Eero. I first tried Eero, maybe 2 years ago when it was the first of the mesh Wi-Fi solutions, and was very happy with it. I tried them all, and then Eero came out with their newest second generation Eero and the Eero beacons, and I flipped my lid. So Eero now, the second generation Eero, they've learned, it's twice as fast. It's tri-band. The beacons plug into the wall, so they're easy to install. They also have a nice nightlight feature, which I really, really like. It's very easy to set up the Eero. You can do it in minutes. You get your Eero, you plug it into your router. Actually, it's going to replace your router if you can. You can use it with a router, but I would plug it in to the cable modem or the DSL modem. Make it be the router. It does a better job. Then you fire up the app on your iOS or Android device, and it walks you through installing the two beacons, which spread the Wi-Fi throughout the house, about 1,500 square feet per Eero device. So this is big enough to do a 4,500 square foot house. And if you want to add more, you can get out to the pool and everywhere. And I have to say, Eero has transformed my experience of Wi-Fi. If you have the experience of Wi-Fi bogging down, stalling, buffering, not working right, devices having a hard time joining it, device is sometimes joining the neighbor's Wi-Fi? You got to take a look at EERO.com. The second generation Eero and Eero Beacon are even better. More speed, more range. The third 5 gigahertz radio means you get not only more bandwidth, but more places to put content. So if you're going to watch Game of Thrones streaming tonight, you're going to really wish you had an Eero. You're going to really wish you had an Eero. The new Thread radio built into the Eero can connect low-power devices, locks, doorbells, and other sensors. Thread is the new standard for Internet of Things devices. And it's very easy to isolate your Internet of Things devices, or if you've got guests, set up a guest Wi-Fi network to keep them off your main network. So security is paramount. And I should show you my Eero app. Actually, I don't have it with me, but it's probably too small to show you on the iPhone. But with the Eero, you can tell name every device in your house and assign them to a user. So I've got my devices. Michael has his devices, our kid. And if it's time for Michael to go to bed, it's the easiest thing in the world. I'll just go to the – I can do this on my Echo, by the way. I can say, Echo, pause Michael's Wi-Fi, and he's offline. He has to go to bed. Or I can do it right from the family profiles on the Eero app. I just press the pause button. It doesn't affect me. It only affects Michael. There's also fantastic – this is something new, Eero Plus, and I pay a subscription fee for this. It's well worth it. Filters. So I can say Michael's devices are blocked from adult content. They have to use safe search. All of them, and ours not, maybe, but all of our devices are protected against malware. This is fantastic. You can schedule pauses. So I have a schedule that says after 10 p.m., between 10 p.m. and 7 a.m., Michael can't use the Wi-Fi. He's got to go to bed and get some sleep. Any house with teenagers in it will really appreciate that. Eero, free overnight shipping in the U.S. or Canada. Go to Eero.com. And all you have to do is select overnight shipping at checkout and use TWIT as the offer code, and that'll make it absolutely free. You're going to want it. You're going to want it. Get it now. It is, and I have tried them all, the best mesh solution, EERO.com. Don't forget the offer code TWIT for free overnight shipping. Harry McCracken, the technologizer, Lisa Schmeiser, the supersider, the incomparabler. You need a nickname.
I do.
Everybody has to have a nickname. So I loved this, and it really isn't that big a story, but you always hear on the autonomous vehicles, what do they call it? The trolley scenario where, do you know what I'm talking about? Okay. It's kind of, cars driving down the road, and there's a bunch of these. You have a choice. Do you kill one person? Like, okay, so you're driving down the road. You're going to have an accident. Mm-hmm. You can either plow into a trolley car and kill everybody, 20 people, mm-hmm. or plow into that beautiful mother and their little baby girl walking across the street. What do you do? What will you do? Now, a human, I don't know. But people say, I disagree with this. People say, well, we've got to tell self-driving vehicles what to do, right? In my opinion, what you tell the self-driving vehicle...
Exercise human judgment is what you said. Tell us all.
No, you tell it to drive as well as it can, hit the brakes, and cross its little robot fingers. You don't say, well, maybe you should hit the car with anyway,
the
Germany's decided.
The registered headline is fantastic.
Kill animals and destroy property before hurting humans, Germany tells future self-driving cars. That's kind of what they said. In Wednesday, the Federal Ministry of Transport and Digital Infrastructure announced it's going to implement guidelines devised by a panel of experts. Experts, folks, not amateurs.
Expert animal killers.
Experts.
expert property insurers.
On 14 scientists and legal eggheads, according to the Register. And there are 20 rules. I know. I love the Register. They're so snarky.
I want legal egghead as a job title.
Legal eggheads. So, again, in my opinion, if designs autonomous vehicle software, please call me, come here, tell me I'm wrong. It strikes me what you do is you don't make a rule about what to hit or what not to hit. You say drive as well as you can. Try not to hit anything.
Yeah.
Just try not to hit anything. And if you do, it's an accident, just like a human. No human is saying,
I think I'll drive off the cliff rather than run into that trolley. No human's doing that. You're going to try to not hit anything.
So can I tell you a story from my vacation of last week?
Yes. Where were you?
We were up in the Lost Coast in far northern California.
This wasn't for the eclipse. This was to get away from the eclipse.
This was to get away from everything. Technology, the eclipse. Okay. And at one point, we're driving on a two-lane road through the redwoods. It's hairpin turns the whole way. I've tossed the air sickness bag back to my kids. So I'm serious. I keep a stack of those in the car. And
I used to get car sick as a kid. Yeah. It's
awful.
Horrible thing.
And I have the Dramamine the whole nine yards. But as we're driving these really curvy hairpin turn roads, I round a corner and there's a fawn that runs right across the road.
Do you hit Bambi or drive into a redwood?
What happened is I slowed down. Bambi saw the car, freaked, ran in the opposite direction, ran in front of us again.
Oh, boy.
Dithered in the road for 7 minutes.
That's what Bambis do. And you stopped.
Yeah, until we finally... But I was thinking about this, and I thought, well, this is the thing about driving cars and making rules about animals. Animals don't behave predictably or logarithmically. You have to be able to write software that can respond to each individual movement and try to predict out how
much longer
it's
going to be.
Could
do it better than a human, right? Because the software doesn't have an expectation that the deer will get out of the way. The software says there's something in the way.
And it just
try not to hit it.
Bopping back and forth, bopping back and forth. And Bambi did eventually bound down the side of the road, and we watched to make sure there was not another Bambi or Bambi's mom heading after it.
I think this is an example of a computer. Self-driving car will do a better job. And I think, frankly, in most cases, a self-driving car is going to do a better job than a human, because humans have expectations. Oh, that guy's not going to hit me or whatever.
Yeah.
The Bambi's going to run. And, oh, look, it ran away, and and it came back.
It seems like it's a data filtering challenge on one level, because if you're a self-driving car, you have to be able to identify all potential obstacles that are coming at you. It's a data filtering challenge, data identification, and then reaction.
It's just a rabbit hole. You just tell the car not to hit anything if it can help it.
Do we know if current self-driving software is designed to identify Bambi or... Our animals.
Or raccoons. The trash. Who will speak for the trash pandas?
It would. Yeah. I just saw Guardians of the Galaxy. That's what they call. Yeah.
And does the software say, okay, there's a trolley here? Yeah. There's a wonderful mother and child.
The software
here.
Says thing there. Try not to hit either one of them.
Are there three people here? Two people here?
Yeah. I would hope that you don't have to write that into software, because then you say, well, but if you kill that grandfather and then the grandchild's not born, then they won't be able to create the Terminator. So kill the grandfather. I mean, anyway, this is what the Germans say.
The cynic in me also thinks that the reason you set regulations like this is this protects a government or a municipality.
That's, it's about liability.
From future lawsuits by saying this has already been hard-coded.
In fact, you'll see. That's exactly what they're really talking about.
And we will have to get our head, I mean, even if the number of people who die goes down dramatically.
Which it will.
We'll have to deal with a certain number of
people
completely
get
horrible
hit by cars.
Problems.
You're going to have lawsuits the first time the software fails, or the first time it's an operator error, but the operator in question wants to say it was a technology error.
It's humans are so bad at this, because I would submit it's the humans that have all these worrisome stuff. Because we're irrational. A computer will say, well, that's 33,000 traffic deaths that have been taken off the road, and I killed five people. Big deal.
Airplane accidents freak us out.
Yes.
Car accidents we're better at dealing with.
But they're so rare, airplane accidents, compared to car accidents. Yeah. Nevertheless, we're in the sky, and so it's scary. Anyway, this is what the federal German Ministry of Transportation says. The protection of human life always has top priority. Well, duh. If a situation on the road goes south and it looks as though an accident is going to happen, the vehicle must save humans from death or injury. And this is the key, even if it means wrecking property or mowing down creatures.
Very Isaac Asimov-ish logic.
Very German.
I keep thinking that can't possibly work on like safari.
The Germans want to have wars. We have wars.
Do you kill the Jeep full of five people, or do you kill the endangered species?
You don't. You avoid an accident at all costs. And if you hit something, it was by accident. And it was the... I don't... Anyway, if an accident is unavoidable, the self-driving ride must not make any choices over who to save. It can't wipe out an elderly person to save a kid. No decisions should be made on age, sex, race, disabilities. All human lives matter. Okay.
It will be interesting to see how they plan on developing for that. How are they going to make sure there's no bias built into the technology?
Where's my pen? I need my pen. I want to telestrate. I want to show off for Lisa.
Okay.
Where did the pen go? Did it get knocked off? Three.
Mm-hmm.
This is the liability part.
Mm-hmm.
A surveillance system should be in place, such as a black box. I guess I could use my finger to draw. It just seems so so much like a caveman. Seems like a caveman. A surveillance system should be in place, such as a black box, that records the steps leading to an accident. And this is what you were talking about, Lisa. So it's obvious who was driving at the time and who is therefore at fault.
Yeah.
That part sounds extremely sensible.
Yeah, the human behind the wheel of the computer, the identity of the driver should also be documented. It should be entirely possible to proportion blame accurately, essentially.
Yeah.
And that's insurance, because nobody else cares who's, I mean.
You know, well, we might be able to learn from it for future software.
Yeah, we can learn from it, yeah. Drivers should, and this is also German.
It also helps make sensible policies, such as these are the circumstances under which we allow self-driving cars on these roads. These are the upper and lower limits on who gets to use them, things like that.
Yeah. Drivers should have full control over what personal, this is German, over what personal information is collected from their vehicles. And actually, Tesla right now knows everything. Because I called them and said, you know, your car went backwards when I pressed forwards. Mm-hmm. And they said, well, let's check the logs and see what you actually did. And they said, no, Leo, you didn't press. You weren't in reverse.
Has any divorce lawyer subpoenaed Tesla's logs yet?
They know where I am at all times. Well,
because that seems like that could be a really interesting dimension for future suits.
And just a little tip for abused spouses. If you have the Tesla app on there and you're logged in, you can see where your car is at all times.
Yeah.
At all times. The register goes on to say, ultimately, drivers will still bear responsibility if their autonomous charabanc crashes. That's very, that's got to be a Britishism. What the hell is a charabanc?
Charabanc?
Charabanc.
We all started
that's
googling
very
the definition.
That's very register. Unless did Ian Thompson write this? Unless it was caused by a system failure, in which case the manufacturer's
on the hook. An early form of bus used typically for pleasure trips.
An early form of bus?
Yeah.
Apparently it's...
Wikipedia says it's pronounced charabang in colloquial British England, and it was an early type of motor coach. So I like the historic reference where it was the first iteration
today.
Of a technology. Yeah.
We've all learned something. So there you go. I mean, we've not done this in the U.S. yet. Mm-hmm. Maybe this will become a template for U.S. law, or maybe not. But what I really want to hear from is some artificial intelligence expert who writes software for self-driving cars. Do you really code that in? It seems to me you would just, am I nuts? You would just
somebody
say,
who
do
really
the best.
Hates raccoon is like, when in doubt, aim.
Hit the raccoon. If in doubt, hit the raccoon. No, you say, don't hit anything. And you don't put in code that says, well, if you're going to hit something, hit it, hit the raccoon. Mm. Why would you put that in? All right.
Yeah.
I just
don't like raccoons. Somebody
well,
whispers
yeah,
as they write their
yeah.
subroutine.
Yeah. It's a chance to get raccoons.
Yeah. I have two in my yard that we let have our fruit trees all the time. They're fine. There's no anti-raccoon bias here.
Really?
Yeah.
You're a raccoon lover?
I tolerate them. I mean, we share the island with them, and so we've got
You
that.
Don't want them in the house.
We had one
Wait a
in
minute,
the house
You live
a
on an island?
Ago. I do. It's true. Yes.
Where is this island?
It's Alameda.
Oh, well, it's a big island.
Yeah.
It's like saying I live on an island in Manhattan.
No.
I live on the Isle of Manhattan.
I would argue we're surrounded by water.
But Alameda was a naval air station, and so there's not a lot of residential homes there, right?
There's more now.
There's
They've been built
few,
up, and there was a small core of pre-naval station houses.
Yeah.
And then there's the houses that were built in the World War II run-up, and there are now new developments.
What is the population of Alameda Isle?
78,000.
There you go.
Yeah.
It's bigger than Petaluma.
I would argue that the raccoon population is probably in the six figures.
hundreds of thousands.
I've got like an albino opossum in my backyard, a couple of raccoons.
So we had a very fun week. We had the eclipse, and Google piggybacked on the eclipse and kind of embarrassed us because they announced, well, seriously, they announced they were going to have a big reveal at streaming right after the eclipse. Mm-hmm. So we brought in hosts. We had Jason Howell of All About Android, his co-host Florence Ion. We brought in staff because what we do with live streams, we sit there, we talk about the live stream. Mm-hmm. The live stream, well, I can show you the live stream. There wasn't much to it. It was a stage in a park in New York City, and the curtains opened, and a giant Oreo-shaped robot appeared, and that was it. There was nobody. Nobody took the stage. There was no Bozema St. John to say how wonderful Android Oreo was. Arrived. There it is. That's the video. This is. I felt so bad for Jason.
Yeah.
That's it. We brought you in. Twit Live special. It's an Oreo.
I'd love to know about the negotiations for this and for Kit Kat, which I guess is the precedent.
Are they licensing it?
They have to. You can't just do permission. That.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
I'm guessing maybe money does not exchange hands, but, I mean, I assume Nabisco loves this, except in the case of stories about Oreo, Android Oreo, that aren't so favorable, but...
Yeah.
Well, Kit Kat was tricky because it was partly owned... By in the U.S., it was owned by Hershey, and it was owned by Cadbury or something like that. It was two different companies.
Nestle and the rest of the world, I think. Hershey in the U.S.
Yeah. Hershey is. So Oreo is also a little bit complicated because Cadbury has a stake in it. I think it's owned by Mondelez. And so, yeah, and Google always said we didn't give any money to Hershey / Nestle. But they must have talked to them.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it wasn't money, but, I mean, they're giving them a big ad.
Yeah.
And how many tech journalists are going to be eating Oreos from now on, right?
I never eat Oreos, and I almost did after reading this news.
It
definitely has a favorable
impact.
It'd
be funny to see if the sales are actually, if there's any sort of bubble because of the power of suggestion.
Oh, of course. Sure. So they've got it. I mean, that's the thing.
Good right now.
So the Oreo biscuit. Okay, Wikipedia.
Oh, yeah.
Oreo biscuit was first invented... by Nabisco.
It was a very dainty kind of biscuit for ladies' tea parties originally.
In 1912, in the current site of the Chelsea Market, Chelsea, Manhattan.
So was it launched as a competitor to the Nabisco famous chocolate wafer?
It was launched as a competitor to Hydrox.
Hydrox, which preexisted.
Which is a terrible name, but a delicious cookie. Although I find Hydroxes, and maybe I'm wrong, are often imperfect, whereas Oreos tend to be perfect. Do you ever find, like, the Hydrox?
Do you eat a
like,
lot of both?
No. I'm just saying, from my memories as a child, that the Hydroxes sometimes were a little whopper-jawed, you know, like there'd be an uneven layer of filling, but the Oreos always seem to have. It may be because Oreo, Nabisco, and its food scientist, Sam Porcello, have 5 patents for the Oreos. Porcello retired in 1993. And, oh, this is good. In the early 90s, health concerns prompted Nabisco to replace the lard filling with partially hydrogenated vegetable oil. Now we know the lard's safer.
Yes.
Bring back the lard.
Oh, it says starting in January 2006, they replaced the trans fat with non-hydrogenated vegetable oil.
Oh.
So it...
And causing a run of Oreos. There is a risk of... But people like Oreos because there's no animal products. So it's a vegan cookie.
They were originally sold by the pound, I discovered.
Oh, really?
When doing a little research after Google's news.
A pound of Oreos.
I guess everything was sold by the pound in those days at grocery stores, probably out of barrels.
Yeah.
In 2013, research on rats at Connecticut College revealed that Oreos may be as addictive to rats as cocaine.
Those poor rats are always getting addicted to everything.
This is what Nabisco is worried about. It was all really good until Leo mentioned the rats. Right? It was all like really great stuff. And I'm sure there are a lot of people running out to buy Oreos. I don't like it when, frankly, Google uses a brand name. I felt like we were kind of willy-nilly forced to advertise for Kit Kats. Now we're forced to advertise for Oreo. But really, when you get to O, there aren't a lot of choices.
You could just call it Android O.
Yeah.
I thought they might do that.
You could, if you don't feel like talking about Oreos.
Complaining that you're breaking the loosely... thematic snack system, though.
Yeah. You know, it's all desserts all the way down. Yeah.
And why did they decide for K and O to do the branding and not for other ones?
No one knows.
I wonder if it's based on the engineer's snack preferences.
See, this is why Google should have said a little bit more about Android O than just it's a cookie, right? Yeah. Anyway, apparently, I've been checking on my Pixel every 5 minutes, and apparently we will at some point, at least on the Pixels, get the update to, you can, if you're in a hurry, do the public beta. And if you do that, you'll get the official version of O. Let me just check to see. I've been checking, literally every day since Monday. So that was Monday.
Mm-hmm.
Wednesday, was it Wednesday or Tuesday? It was Tuesday. It was when?
Wednesday.
You know what I'm going here. Samsung announced the Galaxy Note 8.
Mm-hmm.
No cookies, just 8.
No cookies, no flames.
But a Bixby button. Which really disappoints me. So But this is a phone that really hasn't had a great history in the last year because of the Note 7. I think very important to Samsung's future. And anything that either of you have anything to say about it?
I was at a couple Samsung events over the last year, and they've been really forthright about saying, yes, our phones have been bursting into flames.
Yeah, they, to their credit. They've been
really upfront about it, which is probably the best strategy. And what I have also noticed is that the Samsung Note phones really have an ardent following.
Yes.
I am one of them. I've had every Note phone since it came
and,
out.
And so, you know, the chatter I've heard with this coming out has been, hooray, a new phone. Hopefully this won't burst into flames. The price point is a little bit concerning because we're looking at a $1,000 smartphone.
Yeah.
But that's where we're trending now, I guess.
I mean, I met with the president of Samsung Electronics North America.
Yeah.
And he started by showing me a video of Note owners talking about how much they love their Notes. Now they're looking forward to this one. And he also said, he did not mention the name Apple, but he said that the two companies that dominate the smartphone market are both going to have these high-end flagship phones coming out at about the same time. So.
But they both also have extraordinarily devoted customer bases, too. So I get the sense
they are the tip of the top.
This is kind of an experiment to see exactly how much people are willing to pay for a very powerful, tiny computer that can also make phone calls.
Well, what's your guess? I don't think there's any question that Apple fans will pay whatever Apple asks for the next iPhone, especially that 10th anniversary iPhone.
I think that the Note brand will survive its problems.
I agree.
Partially because there are all these people who didn't buy one last year, and so they're stuck with like a two-year-old Note. And this one, I got some hands-on time with it.
Oh, did you?
You know, for the most part, it's very nice. It's very similar to the Galaxy S8.
Yeah, I don't like Plus. The fingerprint, but
that's the big downside.
Yeah, it's on the back next to the camera.
That's a mistake, which I assume they will correct on the next ones.
I'm surprised they didn't correct it this time, but maybe.
But other than that, it's you know, it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. The edge-to-edge screen is nice. Mm-hmm. Every time they come out with a new one, they improve the pen a little bit, the S Pen.
So the biggest differentiator in the Note, besides screen size, and that's less of a differentiator these days, it's 6.3 inches. The S8 Plus is 6.2 inches. So
I mean, the Galaxy line comes in large, even larger, and even a little bit larger than that, which is different than the old days when there was a very clear dividing line between the Galaxy S and the Note line.
The pen is a differentiator.
Yes.
And then the third differentiator this year is the camera. It's going to have the dual lens system. It's going to be able to do what Apple does later, after the picture in software mode, the portrait mode, but it's going to be able to do it live with a slider, which I think is really
cool. You can adjust the blurriness.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It has optical image stabilization on
both lenses.
On both ones.
No one does that.
Samsung, when I met with them, they had this cool box where they have like a fake scene with a fake woman in front of a fake background, and they have a Galaxy Note and an iPhone 7 Plus. And then they have a switch on the box where they can make the box vibrate. So they made the box vibrate, and they took pictures with both.
The phone is vibrating, or the scene. OIS would help with phone.
Well, the phones are mounted to the box.
Oh, they're in the box. Okay.
So and it's all the whole setup.
At least in that demo, you really saw the difference. Yeah. The Apple picture was blurred, and the
I like that because a lot of times on these events they show on the screen, but you saw it happen in real time, and that's a little more encouraging. I have to say the thing about the event that I liked the best was the box, but it was the giant box that the presenters were on. It was, and we didn't realize this at first, it looked like just a giant stage. I couldn't think why the stage was so big until I realized it was screens. And they were standing on screens backed by two giant screens, and the effect was quite dramatic. Let me see if I can, I might have to skip to, this is DJ... Here we go. So that's the stage.
That's
the
beautiful.
Phones look like they're coming out of the stage, and the people on the stage look like just little tiny. This was a really nice effect. I expect we'll see more of these in other keynotes. But look at that! Is that not remarkable? Yeah, he's walking on water now. The following day, the vice chairman of Samsung Korea was sentenced to 5 years in jail.
Yep. That was. Did you watch the coverage for that?
No.
They had paparazzo style coverage where, for a while, there was a live feed of the vehicle that transported this person.
It was like their OJ.
It was. It was. And,
well, this is so. Yeah. Samsung is a family run business. Mm-hmm. His father, Lee Jae-young's father, was or still is the chairman, but had a heart attack in the spring and was incapacitated. So even though Lee Jae-young is the vice chairman, he's running Samsung. They'll appeal, no doubt, so he'll have some a little more time without going to jail, I guess. But 5 years in jail would be devastating. And the reason it's a big story, I think I've been told in South Korea, is this is unheard of. Traditionally, these guys running big, massive, I mean, Samsung is 17% of South Korea's GDP. It's a huge part of their economy. Traditionally, these companies have been immune from this kinds of prosecution.
Yeah, pardons have come along when they needed to in the past.
He should have jailed illegal immigrants. He might have gotten away with it. Okay, I'm sorry. I got political. iPhone is the next on the agenda, and we're going to see an iPhone reveal. Well, the rumor is the 12th. How credible is that, Harry?
That's when you would guess, just based on the last few years. So anything else would be an aberration, essentially.
They traditionally do it, what, on the Thursday, Wednesday after Labor Day? Is that what they do? Or they won't do it on a... All right. So this is not rumor. This is based on calculation, not rumor.
Supposedly also somebody has some scuttlebutt.
Okay.
And although sometimes the scuttlebutt is wrong.
Right. Typically, Apple will announce pre-orders the Friday after the announcement, which would be September 15th, and then shipping a week later, which would be September 22nd. But I think with this phone, who knows?
Earlier in the summer, there were lots of people wondering whether their schedules were slipping, and we might be talking more like October or even later for the $1,000 flagship phone. Mm-hmm. But lately, it seems like, no, actually, they are putting together the pieces as they normally do.
I can tell you one thing. Apple does not, Labor Day is on a Monday. Apple's not going to have an event on Tuesday. They've never done that, even though Tuesday's their normal day, because they don't want employees to have to work on Labor Day weekend to get ready for an event. So if it's the first week, it would be September. It would be a Wednesday or Thursday, 6th or 7th. Failing that, it would be on the following Tuesday, the assumption is. And we haven't seen signage or anything. They haven't blacked out the Yerba Buena Center where they normally have it, or Flint Center.
Do you think they'd have it in San Francisco, or do you think they might actually try to have it closer to the
campus? I think they're going to. First of all, they've stopped having them in San Francisco, right? They've all been in San Jose.
They moved WWDC to San Jose this year, too, and that seemed to be a pretty clear sign that they're going to try to.
I think they're going to be in Apple Park, but will they be at Apple Park?
Well, I mean, they've had events at the Bill Graham Auditorium in San Francisco.
Well, that's right. You're right. I'm sorry.
This is their big event, so they need lots of seats as opposed to like an iPad announcement.
Mm-hmm. So Bill Graham, you think?
I have no idea, but it can't be at a teeny movie theater.
We don't know. Do we know how big the Apple Park press auditorium
I'm trying to remember,
is? It's not big.
Whether we know for sure.
Yeah. It'd be fairly cheeky if they used the shoreline in Mountain View.
Well, we'll find out, I guess. Invitations typically go out a week ahead of time. Yeah. So
we'll know more next week one way or the other, because either we'll hear about it or we won't.
If we don't, then that means the 12th, maybe. Mm-hmm. Or maybe later.
Yeah, I'd like to see what the watch updates are like announced that day.
That's the other thing. We're supposedly going to hear about hardware, Apple Watch Series 3. Mm-hmm. I think the smart money is also expecting an Apple TV, a 4K UHD Apple TV, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We'll see. One of the reasons Mark Gurman had that scoop on the last week, but one of the reasons people think that is that some people have seen in their stored movies 4K options, and there's no Apple TV that plays 4K currently, so that's possibly it. Updated TV app that might have live TV. Apple's really been wanting to do that, right? Become a cable box, in effect. Well, I trust Mark Gurman, and you know, he seems to be thinking all of the above. Mm-hmm. So we shall see. It's all you know. It's that season, and then. I'm still waiting. By the way, we'll still be waiting for the Essential phone at that time. I ordered it a week ago. They said 10. I ordered it 10 days ago. They said, oh, it'll be a week. Nothing. Not even shipped. Nothing. And then yesterday I got the email saying, oh, do you want that camera that goes on to the 360 camera? I said, sure, why not? Add insult to injury. Let me give you another $50. at some point, that will come, and a lot of interest in that. And then the rumor is, according to Richard Gao at Android Police, that Google will wait till October 5th to announce. Actually, this comes from EvLeaks. Mm-hmm. October 5th to announce the Pixel 2 and the Pixel 2 XL. Seems some strong indication the Pixel 2 will be made by HTC. The Pixel 2 XL will be made by LG. Might look a lot like the LG LE 30, which is coming out soon as well. And here's an interesting story. Everything else is going to have a Snapdragon 835, including the Note 8. Google may scoop that with an 836. Ev says 836. And Evleaks is usually pretty good.
Has he explained the difference between an 835 and 836? How it will affect a user?
Don't know. It's only one better.
Yeah.
Usually they're bigger jumps, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think this is actually one of my ongoing, and I'll freely admit this is one of my ongoing challenges with keeping on top of Android as a market.
What the hell's the difference?
It's difficult to find someplace that collects all of the information to explain the hardware and the iteration of Android that is running on it to tell you do you want a phone that's faster or do you want a phone that is more responsive? Do you want a phone that does this? Do you want a phone that does that? And so when you're like, oh, it's a different chip. And, well, what does that mean? Does that mean that the phone is faster? Does that mean that it processes better?
The stories I've seen say that the 836 is a minor upgrade and not a big jump to the 835.
As its name suggests.
The 845 is for next year, and that will be a bigger jump. Mm-hmm. Qualcomm, which makes these chips, says that they're going, they're on a 10 nanometer FinFET, which is pretty interesting for the 835. I don't know if they can get any smaller than that. So I'm not sure what. Oh, yep. 7 nanometers. When you get to 0, let me know, right? Yeah. 7 nanometers. What are we going to have? Petameters? What's next after nanometers? That's a billionth of a meter. I could probably look it up on Wikipedia, but anyway. it's 1,000, whatever that is. All right, now I got to look it up. Now you got me. Let's see. You got a millimeter. You got a centimeter. You got a... Huh? Let's see.
You got a meter.
Nano, milli, centi. What is next? So these are littler. Deci, centi, milli, micro, nano, picometer. So 1,000 picometers would be 1 nanometer.
Get back to us when you have picometer processes. Mm-hmm.
Get back to me when you get the 5,000 picometer process. That sounds pretty good. I want a picometer chip. All right. You're right. Excellent point, Lisa. What's the difference? No one knows. Don't know.
Are there Android people who do pay that much attention to the chip?
I don't know.
Not reasonably.
Because Qualcomm has all these ads around telling you to buy a phone with a Qualcomm chip.
Well, first of all, you're pretty much hard-pressed to get non-Qualcomm chip because they own the CDMA patents, which means if you want to support the CDMA on your phone, you're going to be using a Qualcomm radio. Mm-hmm. Apple famously put Intel radios in half of its iPhones, and they performed so poorly they slowed down the Qualcomm radio. They had to slow it down. It's the LTE radio. Mm-hmm. So I agree that it's probably meaningless, and yet all anybody does is say, well, I have an 836. And that's all. It's bragging rights. Right?
It always makes me think of like maybe 1993 when you could get a PC with like a 25 megahertz 486DX or a 33 megahertz.
Right. I got a turbo boost on this one.
Or a 46SX. Yep. Yeah. And there were hundreds of dollars in difference and actual
no performance
results.
Yeah.
And
no performance.
And difference. It seems like those days are long, long, long over.
Well, this knob goes up to 11.
Yeah, I really think that's the difference.
Or it would be like, do you need 2 megabytes of RAM or 4 megabytes of RAM? And that was that actually had a huge impact on the price of the device.
One of my favorite Christmas presents was I got RAM doubler 1 year at the stocking stuff.
RAM doubler.
Yes, and it was. And
did you get QEMM as well?
Oh no, it's just
stacker.
I was
stacker.
Ecstatic though because it made my little Performa so much
RAM
better.
RAM doubler.
I know. God,
those were terrible.
And
days.
There was
it was one of my favorite Christmas presents.
Oh,
and there was soft.
You were really geeky.
There was soft RAM, which was one of the best selling utilities in the market, and it turned out it
didn't
do anything.
Yeah.
But people loved it, and even so,
that's my point.
The placebo effect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's compressing your RAM. Happen. It's making you know, it's good.
Yeah.
Soft RAM. Wow. QEMM 386. That allowed you, I can't remember what that did. That allowed you to access high memory.
It allowed you to get past the 640K barrier or something like that.
I was testing you, Harry. We're going to take a break. Lisa Schmeiser is here. She's editor-in-chief. I like how I'm starting to sound like Dean Martin. Lisa Schmeiser is here. She's editor-in-chief of Super Cyber with us. It's great to have you, Lisa. Also here on The Incomparables, aren't you?
I am on The Incomparables,
I have had nothing to drink. I think you will vouch for that.
I think we should enter a glass of apple juice just to keep the emotion going.
Also with us, Mr. Harry McCracken, the technologizer from FastCompany.com. Our show today brought to you by the backup experts, the data protection heroes at Carbonite. If you know, and by the way, I haven't said this yet, but our hearts and prayers and minds and thoughts are all going out to our friends in Texas. Harvey, what a nasty storm, and now huge flooding, and even in metro areas like Houston. And we hope you're all right. And not to commercialize it, but every time I see a disaster like that, I think, I hope those businesses, you know, you can rebuild the business, you can buy new computers, but the data on the computers, that's pretty hard to replace if you haven't been backing it up. And I think about when disaster strikes, when ransomware ravages the world. I just read that Maersk, the big shipping company, which got bit by, I think, the Petya ransomware virus, in their quarterly results said, we lost $300 million because of Petya. $300 million. The pharmaceutical company Merck shut down, had to shut down. They've closed their offices. So data loss is a serious thing. Now, if you've got a good data protection strategy, you don't have to worry about ransomware. And I would submit that if your business isn't using Carbonite, you better darn well check it out. Carbonite.com for home or for office. If you go to the office side, and look in the resources section. There's a bunch of white papers, a lot of things about backup, but also ransomware mitigation, protecting your business from ransomware. Read about that. They even have a link to fightransomware.com. They're a supporter of that to help you understand and teach your employees what not to do. But ultimately, no matter what, whether it's acts of God, ransomware, acts of hackers, or just human error, you got to protect your data. And you got to do it right with Carbonite. Go to Carbonite.com. Pick the plan you're right. They've got high availability plans. They've got hardware solutions that then back up to the Carbonite cloud, like the eVault. They've got a bunch of there's the eVault right there. A bunch of different solutions. And if you're a business that needs to get back online fast, you'll really appreciate their high availability solutions. This is not your pappy's backup solution. This here is the best. Data protection experts at Carbonite. Carbonite.com. Start your free trial today. No credit card required, but do use the offer code TWIT and you can get 2 free bonus months if you decide to buy. And big savings too at Carbonite.com. Back it up. The data protection experts. Okay, let's see. We talked about Apple. We talked about Google. I think we got all the phones. Are there any other? No essential phone? We get Note 8. I just, at this point, and this happens every year around this time, because I buy these things, which is crazy. It's a budget buster. I don't even want to think about another, and they're $1,000 for these devices. And yet, so Jason said, since you bought the Essential, I'll buy the Note 8. Well, I'll buy them all, but he'll be the one holding it. And then I think I'm going to get the new iPhone, and I definitely get the Pixel XL. Pixel 2XL. I'm a Pixel fanatic. That's the Android choice for me. I won't go through the leaked images of the iPhone 8 and all of this. The Essential phone comes with 6 gigs of RAM, right? The Note is 4 gigs of RAM. Or is it 6? Maybe it's 6, too. I don't know. I think that's another one of those bragging rights things where it doesn't... You probably wouldn't notice a difference.
On tablets, it definitely makes a difference. So.
Yeah. Although Apple's notoriously stingy with RAM, aren't they? I don't think they have anything more than 4. I don't think so.
The iPad Pro is okay. I mean, 4 is...
I feel like the iPad Pro... You're using a 12.9-inch Pro? Is that the newest version?
No, this is the original one. Or actually, this is the 256-gig version of the original one. It's not the brand new one.
I have to say the new 10.5 is noticeably faster. And I think some of that is because of ARKit. I think that they want to be ready for that to be an AR device with bigger camera. Look, you're both using iPads. Aren't
I have an
you
iPad
cute?
Air, too. So.
You're so cute.
Yeah. I love it.
And I'm using my giant, this is the giant iPad.
Yeah.
Yeah, the 30-inch iPad that Apple never made, but really ought to.
Yeah.
This is the Surface Studio. But it's kind of like, when you look at it, it's kind of like it's
the
a
giant. The Surface Studio is beautiful.
It's kind of like a big iPad.
Yeah. Well, Lenovo's got a couple machines like that, too. where they've moved towards
all-in-ones.
Yeah, and they've emphasized with Lenovo, they've emphasized portability. And at the demos I've been to and the hand-on stuff I've done, they've shown that you can play board games on them.
I know, those are really weird, aren't they?
Well, no, I was thinking it's really smart because what they're doing
is tables almost.
What they're doing is they're turning the computer into a social experience and a family experience. So instead of having four people in front of their tablets at night, you can, you know, pull out one and have people have everyone plays a game and then goes back to their tablets.
They're like 27 inches. Is that the size? Yeah, I think we had an idea.
Yeah, and I've seen them used as recipe stations and kitchens and things like that. But the idea was you just had this big iPad-esque experience you could take from room to room, and it would change contextually depending on what you wanted to do. I thought it was a great
Father Robert had one. I don't think it had a stand, or it had like a weird like tilt stand.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's the only thing to me that makes this. Well, yeah. I like the high resolution. I love the screen, but really the fact that you can tilt it to 15 degrees and make it like a drafting table, that to me is the most interesting thing about the Surface Studio.
The person I know with the massive iPad is actually an architect, and she does bring it home to work and it tilted like that.
Or Harry.
And me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And this is my primary computing device.
Yeah. Really use it as a laptop. Yeah.
They're so much lighter. It's nice, and I'm sure you use it at press events that way, right? Where you just
Although until recently, I still would take like a MacBook Air to press events because for live blogging, I was more confident that I could be able to like multitask and go back and forth between my live blog and Twitter and Slack.
Because the screen real estate is still a consideration.
But I'm with this where I can share more stuff on screen at once. I'm finally at a point where I use this as my primary live blogging tool.
Interesting. So is there something that you can't do with that or you wish you could do with that you can do with a laptop?
There are some things that are easier, Photoshop is still the most powerful tool for serious photo
Although
stuff.
Although Affinity Photo is
that's
powerful.
Pretty darn impressive.
Hard to use, but pretty powerful.
I swear by Dropbox. Dropbox is just more flexible on a Windows PC or a Mac than it is.
Right.
On a device like this.
Apple, though, is building in pretty good support for Dropbox. And now you haven't got iOS 11, have you?
This is running the...
So you have the file manager.
Yeah. I don't find that terribly exciting yet, though.
Oh, okay. It does give you access to your Dropbox files, though.
Yes,
nice.
But it's not life-changing. I wish that it treated Dropbox and iCloud more similarly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. iCloud is still much better integrated into the operating system than Dropbox.
Well, you can't really blame Apple for favoring their own.
I'm not surprised, but I think there's still a place for these third-party document managers.
You know what, really, and I hadn't really thought about this, Apple's, this was a study of teenagers. Apple doesn't say anything about who buys iPhones or any demographic information, but in this study, it said that the majority of U.S.-based teens, 75%, three-quarters, have iPhones, 76%. Yeah. And 81% say their next phone will be iPhones. This is from Piper Jaffray. And what's interesting is that means iMessage, forget WhatsApp, forget Facebook Messenger, forget Google completely. iMessage is dominant among the under 20 set. Mm-hmm. Fascinating. I mean, that, you know, that shows that Apple's putting more and more into its messaging platform, including, I think, payments are coming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was one of the announcements they made in their last tech event. Well, at this point, if the teenagers have iPhones, the question that doesn't get answered, but I'm curious about, is what percentage of those teenagers bought their iPhones themselves and what percentage got them from the bank of mom and dad?
I'm sure they're almost all from the bank of mom and dad, and in many cases, hand-me-downs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? That's where our teen gets his when I'm done with my iPhone 7 Plus.
Yeah.
He'll replace his 6S with that, right?
So I know there have been studies that showed that one of the reasons that tablet sales have plateaued is because device makers were not counting on families.
Hand-me-downs.
No, they weren't. They were seriously thinking that people would always just buy, I guess, batches. And there's been the hand-me-down effect. Have there been similar studies that have shown that being the case for phones? Or
no, I don't know. That's a good question. Although Apple seems to have no trouble selling iPhones in mass quantities, much higher quantities than iPads.
Yeah, I think it turned out the iPad was less of a device where everybody in the family has their own one, and more like a PC, a shared resource.
Yeah,
and that shared resource you don't want to upgrade every single year. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a really interesting question, Lisa. But that raises a good question. Do people buy a new iPhone every year or every other year? Is that kind of like automatic?
Well, I mean, in the old days, you had your two-year contract, mm-hmm. which gave you an incentive to upgrade after 2 years, and you don't have that now, but there are all of these plans from Apple and from the carriers that allow you to pay for your phone on installments, mm-hmm. and then when the next one comes out a year later, to trade in your old one for a new one and continue making installments,
yeah.
Which mathematically is probably not the world's greatest idea, although I do it myself,
yeah.
but at least it's a plausible thing to do.
Yeah.
Well, the Pew Research Center keeps track of digital habits in Americans.
There's a good study of American internet.
I just looked up the most recent numbers, and they say that 92% of 18 to 29-year-olds own a smartphone.
92%.
So you're looking at...
It's pretty well saturated.
Yeah, you're looking at tremendous saturation. So the Piper Jaffray figure, I'm no longer giving it quite a side eye, but I would really like to know...
Well, 76% of that 92% is iPhones.
Yeah. So
that's pretty good.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good percentage.
Take that all. I mean, there are all, for years, there were these experts who were mm-hmm. constantly predicting that Apple was losing its luster among young people and Samsung was
the new
brand.
It's quite the
I
opposite.
I hope nobody is still claiming that.
No. Yeah. Samsung was the one to claim that.
Well, they're also pundits.
I think one of the things that points out, too, is Google has made tremendous inroads in the U.S. education market, where the Google apps are pretty much a default for many, many school systems because you can do collaborative work, teachers can issue assignments, edit quickly. They don't have to manage files that way. So are we looking at a generation of users who are taking it for granted they're going to have to negotiate multiple platforms and multiple vendors just to get stuff done?
Well, the Chromebook, I mean, it turned out where the Chrome Pack has really had its impact is in school systems.
Yeah.
And it is sort of the new Windows PC. And it really has hurt Apple in terms of how they're doing there, which is why Apple came out with this new mm-hmm. $329 iPad, which actually seems to be a hit. And maybe we'll help them compete.
Well, I have a very small school-aged daughter, and her class is a Chromebook classroom.
Oh,
and,
good. I actually prefer that because you have a real keyboard.
And the school district does use Google Docs all the way up through high school because when I work with high schoolers, they'll usually just send me a Google Doc.
Google seems to have a complete offering for a school.
Mm-hmm.
Who's really suffering there is Microsoft, though, Windows, because that's that was the dominant school platform, not Apple, but Microsoft.
Well, it made Bloomberg News a couple weeks ago when Nielsen Research announced that they switched from Microsoft Office for their workforce to the Google Suite, and they said, "Yeah, this is actually what we're using as a recruiting tool because younger adults who have come up through the school system and through college using the Google tools expect to walk into a workforce and have feature parity with the software, and." They're not thrilled with Office. They'd rather use the same Google apps they've been using for nearly a decade.
And now you see why it's so important to get in that.
You get them young. Well,
get in that school.
I wonder, and this is purely speculative, but you think about the foothold that Apple had in education in the 80s and 90s, and how much do you think that helped rocket the popularity of the iMac in the late 90s? Because you had people who were not that many years removed from the experience, and how much do you think it helped with something like the original iPod, where there was the expectation of I get how this works. This hits a button in my brain that's been installed as a child.
A lot is my guess.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's why Apple's clear strategy is abandoning Mac OS and moving everybody towards iOS because you've got a generation that just intimately understands how iOS works.
They're mobile first.
They're mobile first.
Yeah.
And they're going to use iPads and iPhones, maybe not even iPads, maybe just, as we get more powerful in these phones, you may not even need. What do you think of the solutions that Samsung, and they mentioned this again in their Note 8, announcement. Samsung and Microsoft also has something similar. These solutions like Samsung's Dex or Microsoft's Continuum that allow you to use your phone as a desktop computer, kind of almost a Chromebook, where you dock your Samsung Galaxy Note in a little Dex thing, and it's connected to a keyboard and mouse and a big screen, and now you're working. Do you see that scenario? Have you ever seen anybody do that?
I haven't seen it in the wild yet, but I don't discount it.
I've done it. I have a Dex, but I did it once.
I also wonder how much longer the keyboard is going to be your primary interface for dealing with computers. Because, again, you're looking at generations of people who have grown up with drop and drag and touchscreen and typing with just two fingers because that's a transitional technology. So Who is to say that we're not going to see somebody who figures out a better way to...
DeX is a transitional technology. Yeah. The keyboard, the mouse, and the monitor, that's just to make people feel comfortable. Millennials will say, well, I don't need that, man. Yeah. I got my
Because the keyboard was a transitional technology from the typewriter.
Right.
So who's to say that we're not on
and
the edge of another
voice
big
will
one?
Eliminate the need for a keyboard input, eventually.
Only if the software is really good.
And it's getting good.
Because, you know, I was thinking about this. One of the stories that we have on the list is about... Google and Walmart teaming up for grocery delivery.
Let's get to that. Actually, that's a great thing. So why does that help? What does that have to do with voice?
Well, though they say, oh, they want to do it because they want to gain a foothold in voice assistance and in voice activated grocery deliveries, where you can just say, hey, make sure my regular order is available for pickup at Walmart. And
do you think this is a big story? Because I thought, I mean, it's obvious that Google and Walmart are pairing up only in the face of the threat of Amazon.
I think it's an interesting strategy. And here's
do they have a chance?
Yes.
Have you used a Google Home to buy anything?
I haven't, but bear in mind that I don't like using the voice-activated devices because I find it's too much work to train them right now.
I use my Echo almost every day to buy something.
Yeah.
Because it's tied to Amazon.
Yeah.
Amazon knows everything I've ever bought, so it's very easy for me to say, in effect, you know that thing I bought last week? Buy another one of those.
So
if I say, you know, Echo, buy batteries, it says... Well, the last time you bought this, you want more of those? And it knows.
Yeah.
And that is easy. There's no training. That's easy.
So the reason I think that it's actually a really smart strategy is Whole Foods is fairly geographically limited. When they expanded the franchises, the people who cited Whole Foods always looked for really specific zip codes with really specific demographics because they wanted to make sure they could guarantee so many sales per square foot. And there are only so many zip codes you can do that in. So Amazon is not going to have the same comparative geographic reach as Walmart does, because Walmart has a much different geographic strategy. So if you are Google and Walmart, you don't go after Amazon Prime customers. You go after the people who are not geographically served by the Whole Food Amazon team up. And you go after people who still have to buy fresh produce and eggs, but may live in rural Illinois or may live in southwestern Virginia or someplace where the nearest Whole Foods is not half an hour away. So they have a real opportunity here to serve a market that has not seen a lot of attention and love.
And just because there's so many Walmarts everywhere.
Yeah. And it gives Google a scale that it's never going to meet with something like Google Shopping Express.
Exactly.
Which still seems like an experiment.
But Shopping Express has a lot of vendors. I thought they were just going to add one more vendor to Shopping Express.
Because Shopping Express has CVS and they have Costco right now. And again, Costco is another one of those retail chains that has a very limited footprint. They have more outlets, and they're not tied exclusively to high-income neighborhoods. But because Costco's business model rewards more conservative growth in terms of putting down new stores and training a workforce, they don't have the same geographic penetration as Walmart does. Walmart's traditionally weak markets have been in urban areas. But Amazon Prime and Whole Foods do very well there. So by focusing on parts of the country that are underserved by an Amazon-Whole Foods team-up, what Google gets out of this is a tremendous amount of retail data that they don't have access to otherwise.
So,
and they get a reach that Amazon would have to work very hard to get into with Whole Foods. Because right now what Amazon can offer is, oh, you can now buy like the 365 brand pasta if you're a Prime member. Hooray! You know, because you've been dying for this dry pasta. But
that, I was told, was one of the reasons Amazon really liked Whole Foods is because of their generics.
Yeah, and they do have a great generic section, but...
They're not really generics. They're 365 house brands.
They do have great house brands, and the house brands are competitively priced. But
so is this kind of the Mayweather McGregor of e-commerce? And if it is, who's McGregor and who's Mayweather? My money's on. I think Amazon's Mayweather. My money's on Amazon. I think this is a scrappy. Walmart and Google are a lot like McGregor. They're not really boxers. Yeah. They're coming from a different discipline, and they're just hoping to box up against the big guy in this market. But I think Amazon owns this. Amazon in 10 rounds. That's my prediction.
Don't underestimate how much people will like it if it's easy for them to get fresh produce and dairy and eggs just by driving to a curb and picking it up.
What? I don't have to drive anywhere. Yeah. With Amazon and Whole Foods, it comes to my door.
It's urban privilege, though. We're coastal.
Because it's urban.
Yeah,
we're coastal. We're not urban here in Petaluma. This is almost as much of a backwater as Alameda Island.
into that one.
We can get Amazon grocery delivery here.
Yeah.
Frankly, here the competitors are of Safeway, our big, you know, the big grocery store chain.
Yeah, because I know Meijer. I think it's pronounced Meijer. It's got a J in the middle of it. I've only ever seen the signs in the Midwest. I don't think I've ever actually heard someone say the name. But there's a Midwestern chain, Meijer or Meijer, and there's Kroger and there's Safeway that they've all launched delivery things too. What I've heard from people who have used services like that is they get irritated at not being able to easily replicate things and pick them up when they want them to. If Walmart can manage to nail convenience, they'll really have something there.
And you really want to be built into somebody's voice assistant at a very deep level.
Yeah.
And if we're talking about Alaska, it will never be built as deeply into Alaska as Amazon is. Mm-hmm. So I think it makes sense for Walmart and it makes sense for Google too, because Google needs scale for shopping.
Yeah. Is it going to be related to the success of Google Home versus Amazon Echo? Because again,
it's a major piece of the puzzle.
Echo's got my money's on Echo. It's Look at this. When Amazon said, our deal with Whole Foods is closing on Monday, FTC approval.
The crazy amount of stock.
Stock decline on Thursday, last Thursday, 8.1% for Kroger, 6%, almost 7% for Sprouts.
Yeah.
Costco 5%, Target 4%, Walmart 2%. Actually, Amazon went down a little bit and Whole Foods went up, but there were $12 billion in market value from grocery stores.
And it makes total sense because their profit margins are tiny right now.
Yeah.
And Amazon can afford to do crazy things.
Amazon's got a cloud business subsidizing it. So
they don't have to worry about profit margin potentially, and Safeway cannot lose money on every sale.
I'm telling you got to make a strong case for me why this Walmart-Google deal is going to do anything to stop the Amazon juggernaut.
I don't know if it'll stop. I think they'll have different market positions.
Walmart, by the way, hates Amazon.
Oh, yeah.
Walmart, they bought Jet, right, so that they could compete with Amazon. Yeah. I haven't seen anything come of that, by the way. Have you seen?
Hasn't changed my life yet.
Nothing's changed there. That was a waste of money.
They put the Jet guy in charge of all of Walmart e-commerce. So he may have played a role in this deal with Google.
He's been reorganizing positions, and they have been lining up the ducks
behind the
scenes.
Yeah. They're just doing it behind the scenes. The Jet guy hates Amazon because he started diapers.com, and Jeff Bezos basically put him out of business and then bought him for pennies on the dollar.
Yeah.
Killed him.
Yeah.
And he went and he said, I'm going to screw you. I'm starting Jet, which didn't really take off, but at least, I'm sure he made his money back with the Walmart acquisition. And now he's running e-commerce for Walmart. Mm-hmm. So you've got these Amazon. I don't know. I am not a bet against Bezos kind of guy. I feel like he's the one to beat at this point. And
I think the problem Amazon and Whole Foods are still going to have to crack is how to reach market penetration and saturation in parts of the country where you don't already have a built-in grocery infrastructure.
That's assuming they're going to stop with Whole Foods.
Yeah, I mean they could buy somebody else. I joked that they should actually talk to the Aldi brothers, either the guy who runs Trader Joe's or the other brother who runs Aldi.
They should absolutely buy Trader Joe's. Absolutely.
Because then you've got a couple different market and price points there, and Trader Joe's has enough of a culty following where if people are like, oh, I can now order my ginger snaps over, Amazon Alexa, sign me up.
Walmart makes you drive to the store and pick it up. Like, do you want to do that, or wouldn't you rather they just brought you the food?
Why
do you want to get in the car? I don't understand that.
You pick it up on the way home from work.
Okay.
Which is one way of doing it. Or while you're at Walmart and you've picked up your prepacked groceries, you remember that, I also have to pick up.
Well, I understand why they like it.
Yeah. No, shoppers work this way too.
Shoppers like it? Okay. Yeah.
There are sometimes when you're strictly task oriented, and then there are sometimes when you're like, oh, so long as I'm here, this target of opportunity has just come up.
I increasingly notice that more and more of the stuff I get comes in a box from a UPS truck, mostly from Amazon. And I feel like there is a jump for groceries, right? And I've already made a little bit of that jump with Blue Apron, right? Yeah. So I'm almost there. Like, I get three meals a week from Blue Apron. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Amazon has their version of packaged meals. Yeah. Not as good as Blue Apron, but I have a feeling if Amazon doesn't acquire Blue Apron, they will duplicate it, which is why, by the way, the market agrees.
I think food shopping can be contextual. though, because like you, there's stuff I get through Subscribe and Save. You know, like that.
I live on Subscribe and Save. Yeah. I get a box of too big for my mailman to deliver once a month.
So there's that, but there are also last minute things where somebody is saying our class has run out of graham crackers for snack. Can somebody please bring in a few boxes tomorrow? So there's, you know, responsive task oriented stuff. There's the routine deliveries, or there may be special occasion things. I mean, food shopping is.
What if I could have a drone deliver it to you tomorrow?
Oh my God,
tonight.
The drones would be so. Yeah. Okay. I have wished that there was a drone donut delivery service, because when it is 7:30 on a Sunday morning and I'm like, I would have to put on shoes and leave.
Donuts.
It's like, I'm like, oh, my life. It's so hard. Bring the drones.
Amazon needs to buy sprinkles. Mm-hmm. and Amazon should buy Dunkin' Donuts.
Krispy Kreme.
Oh. Why not? They've got plenty of money. Yeah. And they should, as long as they're buy Noah's bagels, too.
See, so Jeff Bezos is grinning at you for that idea.
Jeff looks like he's the cat who ate the canary. Jeff has definitely back in there behind that bald dome there. There's something going on. There's some thoughts going on.
Yeah.
He knows he's on top.
Yeah.
And everybody, it's clear when Google and Walmart partner, not natural friends.
Mm-hmm.
Natural allies, when they partner, it means they're worried about Amazon. And I think they should be. Mm-hmm. I do. Amazon did announce, I don't understand it, that on Monday when the acquisition goes through, they're going to drop the prices at Whole Foods on kale.
Bananas,
avocados, and salmon. Woo-hoo! Run in there. Now, is that long term? Is that just to get attention?
I would be curious to find out if they've looked at loyalty customers and seen that those are often repeat purchases, if this is a way for them to try to make repeat customers feel good about the merger by saying, look, you've benefited immediately.
I think at Whole Foods, kale is a staple.
It is.
Pretty much.
It is. Kale and avocados.
Yeah.
Bananas.
Oh, because I was like, those first three ingredients are smoothie ingredients.
The biggest bin in our Whole Foods is bananas. It's a giant bin. It's so huge. It's like I feel like I'm moved to Belize. It's gigantic.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's avocados are next. Mm-hmm. So,
well, they're clearly sucking up the housing market, obviously. All those millennials buying avocados instead of buying houses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why not? It's the new kind of luxury. Luxury experiences, not luxury things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to do a Blue Apron ad now. Actually, Blue Apron, I should have mentioned, there is a sponsor. Blue Apron is an interest. It's kind of like the gateway drug for this, right? Because I was always skeptical about getting food, particularly fresh produce, delivered. I thought, no. They're not going to pick out the melons, the avocados, the stuff I would pick out. It won't be the same. And so I always went to the store to get fresh stuff, fresh produce. And then I tried Blue Apron, and I think I realized, no, actually, it's completely possible to deliver amazing quality veggies, meats, fish, never frozen, fresh. It's a refrigerated box. It's got dry ice in it, and it is incredible. It's so good that, you know, they have a guarantee. Blue Apron is, the idea is you get it's like everything you need to make an amazing meal. We get our Blue Apron 3 times a week. Actually, we get 3 meals a week, 3 meals for 2 a week. We give one to our in-laws, which is really nice. We prep them a little bit so it's ready for them to go. They don't have to chop anything. The nice thing about Blue Apron is everything you need. I mean, if you need a tablespoon of soy sauce, you get a little bottle. See, a little bottle with a tablespoon of soy sauce. If you need 3 fairy eggplants, you get 3, not 2, not 4. So there's no waste. It actually makes it easier to make the recipe because, you know, if it's here, I must have to use it in some way. And it turns you into an amazing cook. These are meals you can make that smell delicious. It's great. It's so nice to make them in the house because the aromas fill the house. I made the ramen bowl you see on the right there. I made that the other day. And people got, when's dinner? Oh, that smells good. What are you cooking? It is fabulous. You feel good about it. They sit down to an amazing, healthy meal with fresh ingredients. They think you're a great cook. And you say, well, yeah, I am. I'm a great cook, thanks to Blue Apron. Blue Apron is trying to build a sustainable food system and a community of home chefs with the highest standard for ingredients. And I think they're knocking it out of the park for all three. It's very affordable. It's less than going to Whole Foods, less than going to any grocery store, because they don't have the brick and mortar. They don't have to worry about clerks and stocking and all those things. They don't have to rent a big space. For less than $10 per person per meal, you're going to get seasonal recipes, perfectly proportioned ingredients. You can cook the meals in 40 minutes or less. There's no weekly commitment, by the way. You only get deliveries when you ask for them. You get to choose from the menu, so there's lots of choices to suit your dietary requirements, your preferences. They have, yes, they have vegetarian options. And, you know, you don't ever have to worry about a box arriving when you're out of town because you only get it when you ask for it. Listen to some of the things on the menu this week. Basil, pesto chicken with summer vegetable panzanella. We're in the tail end of the summer stuff. We're going to start getting to the fall foods. Oh, man, I hate doing these ads. They make me so hungry. Sauteed shrimp and green beans with globe tomatoes, spinach, and orzo pasta. Here's a vegetarian one. Whole grain pasta and summer vegetables with heirloom tomato caprese salad. Oh, miso butter, salmon, and lo mein noodles with cucumber and charmed tomatoes. Meatball pizza with fresh mozzarella cheese and charmed tomatoes. Now, they have two plans, one for couples, one for families of four. You're a family of four, right, Lisa?
Family of three. Yeah.
Three? Okay, you actually, we feed three with a two-person plan. I should mention this. Sometimes we'll supplement. We'll make a little rice extra or something like that. But even Michael, who's a teenager and eats like amazing, like a brontosaurus. We generally have enough food with a meal for two, but they do have a meal plan for four, and they have more kind of, if you look at the family friendly, it's more family, you know, the family plan is more, Barramundi, and I don't even know what tzatziki sauce is, but is it good? Summer vegetables? Oh. See, doesn't that look good? Your first three meals free with your first purchase. Just go to blueapron.com/twit. You're making me so, it's like torture. Free shipping too. blueapron.com/twit. You will love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home cooked meals with Blue Apron. And I look at Blue Apron and I think this, Amazon should just buy them because it's really, Blue Apron customers, and I know so many people, many of our staff uses Blue Apron. You'd use Blue Apron, right, Carson? Yeah. He's got two boys and feeds a family of four. That's when you realize, no, I don't have to go to the store to shop. This is perfect. This is better than I would have picked. Perfectly ripe and fresh and delicious. BlueApron.com/Twit. Three meals free with your first purchase. We had a fun week this week on Twit, and I think we got Joshua to put together a little mini movie. Mm-hmm. Do you have that movie, Karsten? Let's roll the film.
Previously on Twit.
And it is, in fact, Oreo.
Oh, my gosh. I have no idea how to swallow this right now. Well, obviously,
with a glass of milk.
Know-how. An endoscope is...
You said it didn't have to be disgusting.
It's not disgusting. It's just a camera.
I have
on
that.
Cable. It's going to help you see any sort of microelectronics. But then, you know, naturally, you probably can just...
Stick it in your mouth. You know, like, stick it in your ear.
Or, you know, there's also...
No. This is the most uncomfortable episode ever on this network of all shows.
Tech News Today.
Now, AI is responsible for all the music on a full-length album called I Am AI by artist Taryn Southern to create and produce all chords, production work, and instrumentation on the album.
Did you hear the song? I want to feel, I want to touch, I want to breathe, I want to be alive. The thing just made a song talk about I'm trying to get out of this machine. The first song it makes with a full album, full band, full composure is I want to be human and take over your life because you got me stuck in this box.
Twit, all your favorite podcasts from the 80s, 90s, and today.
It's a
the first thing about being life. Real, the thought process of wanting it. And next thing you know, you find out how you can get it. We all gonna die.
Owen J.J. Stone says this about Amper. We're all gonna die.
Oh, doctor. We got a big week coming up, right? Do we have a week ahead? We don't know what's gonna happen. It's just gonna be a mystery. I can guarantee you it's going to be a fun weekend. You will get it all if you watch Twit.
IFA's coming up this week.
IFA is in Berlin. IFA, you going?
I am.
So jealous.
So. Oh, you want to get more jealous?
When do you leave from Berlin? I've never been to IFA.
It's a fun show.
Yeah.
Are you going too?
Not this year.
Okay.
But
you've gone in the past. I have. Yeah. It stands for, my German's not very good, but basically it's been around for 100 years ago. It's a radio. It was a...
Einstein's
spoke there
1 year.
It's all mobile stuff now.
Yeah. But now it's gadgets.
Yeah.
Mobile World Congress was not in Barcelona. It's going to be in San Francisco, right?
That's not the big show.
Oh, there's still the Barcelona.
There's still the Barcelona show every winter.
I was confused.
Yeah.
So IFA in Berlin in the end of the summer and the fall or winter we get MWC. Yeah, so what are you looking for in IFA this year?
To be honest, I haven't...
No idea.
No, exactly. Because I'm going on vacation and then I'm going to see if I can line up a few press things while I'm there.
Oh, so. You're so smart. It's that or Burning Man, right?
You know, if I had been smart, I would have stayed in San Francisco to enjoy the empty streets.
Everybody leaves for Burning Man. Everybody's already there. I see all these on my Instagram, all these people setting up. And
oh, and you know what? I feel like I should actually backtrack the conversation about 5 minutes and point out that when I made the comment about millennials not buying houses because they're buying avocados, that was purely tongue-in-cheek and making fun of the popular sentiment that's come out.
I think it might be true. In fact, I'm not sure that's a bad thing.
Student loans, man. These poor guys have student loans out there.
Don't buy houses. Yeah. Rent.
Yeah.
Seriously.
I mean, I got told it was because my generation bought too much Starbucks, but it's always, you know, hey, we're going to ignore the complete system.
My generation was fed a bunch of baloney. Yeah. You got home ownership. It's the only thing. You got to own a home. Yeah. And admittedly, it could be a good investment, but it's not a guaranteed good investment. Yeah. I've both lost and made money buying and selling homes. Yeah. But I think that the problem with home ownership, especially if you're young, is it ties you down and you can't go where the jobs are. And look at Detroit and all the empty homes that have been vacated by people who said, I'm just going to walk out the door because I can't get a job here. I got to go somewhere else. Yeah. I don't know how I got on that. I'm just hoping they're buying avocados because there's nothing better than a nice guacamole. Is there?
I'm not an avocado person at all.
What?
I apologize for that. I just can't get past the texture.
Wait a minute. You'd rather eat a donut than an avocado?
Oh, my God, yeah. a nice cruller? Oh, my. But, you know,
Bear claw?
Bear claw, maybe.
Rudyard Kipling wrote the great gray-green greasy Limpopo in reaction to having his first avocado, and I stand by that response. Yes.
I did not know that.
I read that somewhere, and I was like, I get
Rudyard. Gray-green greasy Limpopo river.
Yes.
And he loved donuts. Probably.
As all right-thinking people do.
If you can eat a chocolate donut without licking the icing first, you're a better man than I am, Gunga Din.
Yeah.
Facebook has a new public editor. This is not going to end well. So Liz Spade, who was Kara Swisher's boss when Kara first started at the Washington Post, she was hired briefly as public editor at the New York Times, so briefly that they've decided they've not only eliminated the job.
Yeah.
But they had a great public editor. Remember, what was her name? She went
Margaret
to the
Sullivan.
Post. Margaret Sullivan. She was wonderful.
And she's at the Washington Post, I believe.
She went to the Post.
Yeah.
She was an ombudsman for the reader. So she would call the New York Times to task when things, you know, when they did a story that wasn't well researched. Yeah. I remember the New York Times wrote a story about the sweatshop workers, child workers in China for Apple, and she would call them on the carpet. And then I don't know how Liz did, but she was apparently a little abrasive.
She was not beloved by journalists on Twitter.
She tended to advocate for the institution over any reader response to what the journalists were.
And that's
out. The
opposite of her job, right?
And it was a lot of, well, you people who are giving us blowback on Twitter, let me explain to you how news works and how you should have read this story.
Oof. No, don't get defensive if you're the public editor. That's the last thing.
So being told that you just didn't read the story the right way and discounting the social media dialogue that sprung up in reaction to stories, like, that's not necessarily a great starting point if you were the so-called public editor of a newspaper where your beat is in fact how the public reacts and responds to your institution.
It's like if you had Steve Jobs as the public editor, you know, you read it wrong.
And she also was not really, she didn't seem to see social media as part of today's media landscape.
Right.
Like she really didn't seem to grasp that interaction and reaction to jobs, to articles is now part of the whole public sphere.
She had trouble with the Times journalists
tweeting,
kind of being themselves on Twitter.
Yeah.
Oh, she wanted them to shut up and
it's inappropriate to retweet dog stuff, apparently, things like that. So
I think the Times was really lucky with Margaret Sullivan. They got this person who was brilliant. The job was made for her, and she held it for not that long, a few years.
They had several good people before that.
They did. It used to be a very strong position, and this was very adversarial. And unfortunately, she held the position at a time where the media did need to be called into account over how they chose to cover several stories over the election season.
She was, you know, kind of the fake news.
She was the
brunt
house
of the
flack.
Fake news. Yeah.
She was the house flack. And for people who...
That's not what you need.
No.
You don't want a PR person. So Facebook has hired her.
Yeah.
Which I mean, I'm not sure exactly what she's going to do here. Mm-hmm. She's blogging, I guess, or I'm not sure. What Facebook says is, well, we have Campbell Brown, who was the CNN journalist they hired as their head of news partnerships. Campbell is going to be more public facing. Mm-hmm. We're going to make Spade kind of somebody who's inside, but calls us to task. Is that the right job for Liz Spade? I don't know.
I think she's done some good work in the past because she mm-hmm. was at the Columbia Journalism Review,
yeah.
which was certainly a force for good. When she was at the Times, it was a little unclear whether she could get her head around social media
yeah.
in a world in
Isn't
which stuff is not
that
tightly
Facebook
controlled.
Would then hire
so
her.
It does seem like an odd hire, but who knows? Yeah, maybe she made a case for herself.
Well, that's what's a little concerning is since Facebook has the well-publicized, you know, fake news issue they're still trying to deal with. And they also have I wouldn't say mandate for growth, but a huge component of their operation comes down to people sharing news articles and commenting on it or commenting on publisher streams. And unless you can understand how people have chosen to dialogue with one another, oh God, I just used dialogue as a verb. I'm so sorry. How people chose to
if
conduct
I were Liz
a dialogue
Spade,
with one
I would
another.
Get my ruler out and hit
you know,
your knuckles.
If you can't really look at what is in an online space and accept this is how people choose to talk about the news, and you're like, no, this is how you should interface with it instead, I'm not sure you're setting yourself up for success. So
Facebook yeah. is going to be streaming movies mm-hmm. Live on Facebook Live, not current releases. These are older mm-hmm. releases. Actually, the Motorcycle Diaries, which is quite good. The Constant Gardener, I'm not familiar with. And The Eternal Sunshine. Is that good?
John Le Carré.
Oh, John Le Carré. Oh, okay. Oh, I don't know that one. Is it George Smiley? Is it a Smiley? Okay. Well, I'll be watching that and Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, in which Jim Carrey tries to keep his face from making funny images. They'll all be broadcast from the Focus. These are all Focus Films, Focus Features, Focus Features Facebook page. First time a studio has ever broadcast actual movies on Facebook Live. Mm-hmm. It'll be the first broadcast 6 p.m. Friday, August 25th. Did I miss it? I missed it. Well, there'll be another one.
What does he decide getting out of this?
I don't know.
Yeah, because I'd wonder, what did Facebook promise Focus Features? Or rather, what is Facebook, what does he decide
I think Facebook says, go ahead.
Yeah.
It's your page. You can do it. And since you own the rights to the mm-hmm. movie, it's not yeah. piracy.
Yeah.
Focus, you know, they say this is part of their 15th anniversary. Mm-hmm. The celebration. It's certainly PR. It's not a movie yeah. that
I mean, probably do you think they're doing this to try to gather engagement or streaming metrics internally so that they can start negotiating with studios?
You always have to suspect if Facebook does something, it's really just about the data. Like what?
Well, I'm also suspecting that for Focus Features, because one of the things that's going on right now in movies as well is you have production companies that have been getting into spats with theater chains over the terms of releasing movies in theaters versus streaming or video on demand. And so it's also in the interest of a studio to be able to say, hey, we got this kind of interest with streaming. It does not hurt us to walk away from box office distribution. And this data could be used as bargaining chips later, especially during award seasons, when awards are often predicated on airing in a cinema.
Wouldn't it be interesting? Because during award season, I get yeah. DVDs mm-hmm. and with lots of anti-piracy messages yeah. and stuff on there. For your consideration. Wouldn't it be interesting if instead they streamed them on Facebook yeah. for your consideration and said, all right, celebrities, you want to... The problem is piracy is a big problem because these are all, in many cases, movies in the theaters still.
Yeah.
So well, I'm supposed to,
well, streaming
I'm
is
supposed
already
to shred the DVDs
after I get
them.
Streaming
is
the thing that's already happening for pop culture journalists.
I
write for a site called Previously TV where it's pop culture and TV and TV writing and riffing and recapping.
Oh, neat. I'll have to check that out.
And...
Are you... Mm-hmm. What's your beat?
Whatever they give me.
You don't like focus on 80s sitcoms featuring Ted Danson or something like that?
No, not yet.
Although that'd be
but
a good
I'm
beat.
Sure that's I'm sure that's a foreground I can plumb. But when I first started the gig, I would get watermark DVDs.
Right.
And that with oh please piracy
oh,
is terrible.
Oh, they say all sorts of stuff.
But now it's a password protected site where
sense.
It's streamed
yeah.
and I no longer have the DVDs at all. I just have a password protected site, and some of these sites actually limit the number of times you can watch
right.
a pre-released show because they want to make sure that we're not handing out the user ID and password to people willy-nilly. So
The reason I get the DVDs, I'm not a member of the Academy. I'm a Screen Actors Guild AFTRA member, and so the mm-hmm. Screen Actor Guild Awards send out movies ahead of time. It is nice. They're not HD.
Huh? Do you have screening parties? I would have screening parties.
Not allowed to.
Oh.
Yes, I do.
Okay. Yeah. Incidentally, another reason why Facebook is doing this is because they are trying to figure out how to integrate professional content into Facebook, which I think they're doing partially because YouTube mm-hmm. has placed a large emphasis on integrating more professional content into YouTube.
Mm-hmm. Nobody's licked this yet, though. Apple wants to do it. They've announced they're going to spend $1 billion on new content. Yeah. YouTube spent hundreds of millions, and maybe we'll spend more coming down the road. But the companies like HBO and Netflix just are so dominant. They make so much better stuff. Netflix says we're going to spend $7 billion this year on original content. And I imagine HBO spends something like that. Since you specialize in covering television, among other things, why is it so? Look at what Apple's made so far. Mm-hmm. They've trashed Carpool Karaoke and made this awful Planet of the Apps show. They haven't shown any ability. They hired two executives from Sony. Maybe that's their bid to get some expertise in here. $1 billion isn't a whole lot of money compared to what Netflix is spending. How does Apple or Facebook or YouTube convince people? YouTube already has people watching, but they watch short groin crotch shot videos. It's not...
Well, they watch instructional videos, too.
Oh, it's huge on that. My son learns everything from instructional videos
I have friends that bought and flipped a house and taught themselves all the construction techniques based on YouTube tutorials.
That's absolutely true.
And what
long form. You know, it's not competing.
Yeah. And what I found really fascinating, actually, and we can get back to the scripted shows or remote. But I've found BuzzFeed's Tasty.
Very good.
And they've also got a new DIY crafty series they do where they can show you how to make crafts and they accelerate through that, too. I'm trying to remember what it's called. Nifty. That's what it's called. And I think it's really interesting that BuzzFeed has effectively pioneered it, like nailed this visual format for super quick, super instructional videos. I have reservations about how useful they are, say, if you don't have broadband or if your internet connection goes down and you're mid-recipe. But I honestly don't understand. I should say I don't think it's necessarily smart on Apple's part to push out original content. I don't see why you don't just work on making partnerships with companies that do that already. But that's mostly because maybe this is the inverse of the Whole Foods Walmart thing we just had, where like you point out, Netflix is so dominant in the space.
Right.
HBO's done a great job. A lot of other channels do streaming content. Why would you not just lock down a really nice deal with them? And then that burnishes, that makes it more compelling for people
to use
your product.
What's the skill that Apple lacks and Facebook lacks and YouTube lacks that Netflix and HBO have? Is it a personality?
I wouldn't lump them all together. YouTube, for a while, was doing kind of random celebrities and giving them lots of money.
And they eventually flopped. Shaquille O'Neal had a channel.
They eventually swung back to people who actually do have a critical mass of fans on YouTube. Which makes a lot more sense.
By the way, we should point out the whole purpose, at least for YouTube and probably for Facebook, not so much for Apple, is advertising revenue. Right. For Apple, it's a little more complex because they want to generate revenue through Apple.
Although YouTube also wants you to pay for YouTube content. Right. They want you to subscribe to YouTube.
So it's both. I think YouTube's trying to upgrade the quality of their content because advertisers don't want to be on groin shot videos.
Yeah. Right.
I think if you're a Netflix, though, one of the advantages you have is since you have a deep well of content and people will get on for nostalgic reasons. For example, if they're like, oh, the entire run of this British sitcom I like happens to be on Netflix and it's only $9 a month and I get access to Orange is the New Black and Moana and all these other movies, why not? And
you know,
so
by the way,
they don't just come for one show. They come for one or two shows and then they go through the back catalog and... when they emerge 48 hours later, their loved ones are shocked they're still alive.
It's interesting you mentioned the BuzzFeed Tasty videos because they're very well done and they're very viral. They're produced by Zay Frank. Who do you know? You guys
he's an old
remember
hand
Zay
at this
Frank.
Stuff.
He's an old hand at this stuff.
Endlessly creative,
And he was one of the earliest vloggers on the internet and very famous for his I Will Not Blink videos, Fast Cut. And he went on to BuzzFeed and has created some great video content for BuzzFeed. So that underscores what I maybe think is the case, that it's really, if you're going to make this kind of content, there's some people who know how to do it.
You need to have the visual vocabulary and you need to have this, the, the skills, as yeah. it were. Like, you need to be able to identify what works in a video and what doesn't. And that's a whole different set of skills.
Well, and the new video is, if you look at Tasty, that is not like long form.
No. Well, that was actually a big problem with food blogging. And this is something that I suspect only irritates me, but I used to read a couple different food blogs and I had to stop because every recipe was preceded by a 2,500 word essay on the first time they had it and how it feels in their mouth and how exciting it is to make it. And then like a sidebar into the history of kale and then back again. And I was like, I just want the recipe for the cookies. Let's get to the recipe. And Tasty just cuts right through, and it's cute and compelling and fun to watch.
I should play a little Tasty just so people who have not seen, let's see. These are not videos. This is the Tasty page. It's mostly on Facebook that I see them, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
God, I don't know how to use the internet. You know, you see them every time you go to Facebook, but try and find them. Good luck. Mm-hmm. Huh? I need a teenager. Anybody, we got any teenagers here?
If you were to put up a teenage signal, what would it look like?
Uh-oh. Look at that. I broke the internet. Yeah. I broke the internet.
You really don't know how to use it.
How can you break the internet? I'm going to try again. You know what? I am an old man. I'm typing in all caps. All right. That's the dead giveaway. Here is a typical Tasty video. And this is the kind of thing my son sees all the time. Yeah. They're kind of sped up. Mm-hmm. They have the recipe in it.
Yeah.
You can't. It's pretty compelling because it's happening so fast. Yeah. This was actually, and this is a format now. Everybody's copying the format, but I'm sure Zay Frank was the one who thought it up. Brilliant. And it has the other advantage of cooking shows.
It's such a consistent visual format, though, where people know what to expect. And I think that helps if you're cooking something unfamiliar.
But I never click it because I just see it in my YouTube stream, basically. It has the other thing that people watch the Food Network obsessively for. It makes you hungry. You look at it and you go, oh, that's delicious. Yeah. I think I'll make that someday, but you never do. Yeah. Do you make stuff from this?
No.
No. Nobody does.
I'm still reading through all those epics and food blogs, frankly.
Yeah.
5,000 words on the history of buttermilk dip. So, you know, it's...
Now, let's just all sit and watch Tasty videos. So this is a reason why long form may not be right for YouTube. Yeah. This is perfect for YouTube. This is perfect for Facebook. Mm-hmm. Maybe it would be a mistake to say, well, we got to do what... There you go. Maybe you don't have to pivot to video.
So do we have stats on when people do the majority of their surfing? And the reason I ask is I've seen stats for individual sites, and there are some sites that have a lot of workday consumption.
That's old school, right?
But what I'm saying is that short videos may do better simply because it is easier to watch a 3-minute video when you're taking a work break than it is to have a movie streaming and a Facebook tab in the background.
Right. Well, also, they are naturally shared in social media. And I think really nowadays we get our links. We don't. Yeah. Remember in the early days of the internet, you would follow links and you would go and you would start and you would go down a link hole and you'd be just kind of hours like. We don't do that anymore. We go to Facebook and we go through the feed and we watch videos sequentially. Yeah. Or we go to Twitter and we go through the feed and we watch videos sequentially. And then you're done. I'm done anyway when I get to the one that I saw already, if I remember it. Yeah. So we've just demonstrated that something different going on. Mm-hmm. That maybe the expertise to do this isn't going to come from Hollywood or from Sony.
Yeah.
And that Apple really needs to get out of the business because they have no clue what they're doing.
You kind of have to be all in or not do it, I think.
And not do it for the wrong reasons, because Apple really just wants to generate traffic to Apple Music.
Maybe recognize an audience as opposed to recognizing an advertiser.
Ah, thank you. Make it about the audience. That's where Netflix and HBO have a huge value. Mm-hmm. Netflix partners with Dispensary for strains of weed based on 10 of its original series. Okay. Camp Firewood.
Had American Summer 10 years later.
American Summer 10 years later? I'd smoke that. What is that? Prickly Muffin? What is that? I know. I can't
read it. Camp Firewood is from Wet Hot American Summer.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the camp's name.
Yeah.
This is something Karsten found. What were you looking for, Karsten? What were you seeking there?
Banana Stand Kush. Oh, there's always money in the banana stand.
Banana Stand Kush. That's Arrested Development.
Yeah.
I like that's actually kind of cool. I don't know if it's really a great marketing technique. I don't know. Maybe it is. Do stoners watch more Netflix? You bet.
Yeah. All they need now is the donut drone delivery, and it's a seamless, circle of life.
And that's why Netflix shows just segue automatically, because you're too stoned to find the remote.
Yeah.
So you just keep playing.
Yeah.
Keep it playing. Where's my donut drone?
Yep.
I'm hungry.
So when I used a TaskRabbit to move something recently, the guy told me that he only did TaskRabbit when his side business of delivering fast food to stoners was slow.
So, I'm just glad there's an ecosystem for this guy. That's great. Yeah. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. We'll get back with Lisa Schmeiser from the Supersite for Windows. She's editor-in-chief over there. She's also on The Incomparable. And I've learned she also writes for some TV thing. What was it called?
Previously.tv.
Previously. Mm-hmm. TV. I love that name.
Yeah, it's a great... Tara Ariano and David Cole founded it with Previously. Sarah Bunting, and the URL is fantastic.
Previously.
So is the content by many, many gifted writers.
Mm-hmm. Harry McCracken's also here. He's the technologizer from fastcompany.com and at Harry McCracken. And do follow him on Instagram, because he and Marie are always posting weird and interesting stuff.
I need to post stuff from here.
Yeah.
Well, not necessarily. We do have some retro stuff, though. I know you go to the Computer History Museum and places like that and get some interesting retro stuff.
Yes, I went to the Living Computers Museum in Seattle.
Oh, fun.
It was a feast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they had actual running, like an Atari 800 and stuff like that.
You can use an Apple One.
That's really cool.
I took pictures of everything and put them on.
Instagram. Is it Harry McCracken on Instagram? What is your...
Technologizer on Instagram.
Okay.
Such a great name.
I've followed you forever, so I don't even remember. I just see your stuff all the time. Mm-hmm. Mostly Instagram's what I use when I can't sleep at 4 a.m. Is that like you?
I don't go on it that much. So.
Oh, Doggy Diner.
I went by the Doggy Diner head today.
That
doggy
is the diner saddest head. Picture I have seen in a while.
And I found, there's this little child's
For
fancy
sale,
slipper.
Baby shoe.
That's what came to mind.
It's a glass slipper. Cinderella.
I was out biking this morning, and it was by the side of the road.
Aww. Cinderella, your shoe. See, nowadays you don't have to go around trying on shoes. You just put it on Instagram.
Yeah.
Biked by the Doggy Diner head.
There's a Radio Shack.
That's our local Radio Shack, which is closed, but the lights are still on the sign.
The door is closed, but the lights
are
still on.
That seems very Blade Runner somehow.
Much like our president.
Yeah.
Operation Handcuff. Notice to drug dealers, now is the time to get your 2018 calendars. They're really desperate now when they're saying that. I like to buy my 2018 calendars in August.
Avoid the rush.
There's a Bay Area bookstore chain called Pegasus and Pendragon. They've got outlets in North Berkeley, the Rock Ridge area, things like that. And they do a great calendar sale on the first day of January.
That's when I buy my calendars. You're nuts to buy it ahead of time.
Yeah.
Buy it 1 week in.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody wants an old calendar. Mm-hmm. Oh, here's the
Here's the old stuff.
Yeah.
That was from the...
Trash 80.
The Vintage Computer Fair Festival.
Wow. That was the computer where if you slid your feet along the carpet then touched it, it would die forever. An Apple II disc.
The old floppy disk envelopes were so nicely designed.
Oh, they were.
Was this a WAS? This was a WAS disc, wasn't it?
It was from his era, for sure. Yeah.
Memorex.
Memory excellence. Yeah.
It's turning into something.
And the old Microsoft logo, which I still love.
So 1980s. Oh, my God.
Microsoft should bring that logo back.
Right? Into the heavy metal look.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like that. Oh, and there's your wife Marie with her sister from another mister, Yi Ying Lu. Who's also been on our shows. We love Yi Ying. She is the artist who designed Twitter's Fail Whale, and is a wonderful artist, still doing great stuff. Did she go to the museum with you?
She was at the Vintage Computer Festival.
Oh, fun. There's
a little kid playing some ancient game.
Yeah. What is that? Okay, chat room. You see the game he's playing? He's going into a cave. Whoops. I went too far. What is... Whoa, stop it. What is he playing? Do you know what that game is? It's on a Commodore, right? I'm sorry. I'm jumping all over the place. Yeah. Crystal Caverns. Boz, you win the prize. Yeah. Congratulations. Mm-hmm. Somebody else said tonsil runners. Yeah. No, it's close. Close. There's a pet.
Oh.
We had a pet. I think we gave it away when we moved. We had a pet. Working pet. TI-99A.
Somebody was selling a pile of TI computers.
Wow. I found one on the road a couple of years ago. Yeah, not worth anything.
Oh,
Apple IIci,
I was
right?
tempted to buy that.
That was my first computer.
$250 for a working one with monitor.
Oh, that was my first computer. I played Zork on it for hours. Oh, my gosh.
You wish you could kind of play these old games again. And Zork was so much fun.
I mean, a lot of the stuff you can emulate on on a Windows PC or
that
Mac.
Beautiful picture of the Sydney Opera House. Yeah. It's almost like being there, isn't it? Yeah. Vivid.
It is almost impossible to overstate how much using one of those felt like the future in the 1980s.
Yeah, in
though.
Those days.
It really did.
Yeah. Here's somebody with some future paper called Tractor Feed. Ah, Space Invaders. Mm. This is fun. This must have been fun.
I think that's from California Extreme, which I also went to, which is the show where you pay like $30.
Is that the one in Santa Clara the last weekend of July every year?
You have
year?
Unlimited access to hundreds of old arcade games and pinball machines.
You need to visit me on the island of Alameda because we've got the pinball museum on one end and we have a video game arcade where you get unlimited play for $15 on the other.
I haven't been yet, but people always tell me that.
Yeah.
What is this? Space? It looks like space.
That's Vectrex, which was like a home system that was very
cool. Asteroids. Back when Asteroids was all the rage.
It was like a vector system with cartridges for home play, which I finally got to play.
Inako says to your picture, oh, God, this is like when the kids go to Plymouth Plantation and watch the reenactors churn butter, isn't it? And I love your response. Whoever it was, he played for a long time before he gave me a chance. I
really hope that you and Andy go to one of these games dressed as pilgrims now, because
it's an anachronism.
Yeah.
Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. I know, you know, when it comes to getting a home loan, I remember, you know, it's like you ask a neighbor, you ask a friend, you ask your realtor, you don't really do a lot of thinking about it. You just go, you know, it's because you assume, well, it's all the same process. And it is, if you don't mind being back in the 19th century, you know, it's roughly the same process. I remember the last home loan, it's only 3 or 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. There was a guy with a clipboard. It was about, you know, 3 inches high with little foolscap thin rice paper practically. And he licked his fingers as he went through the rates looking for a rate for us. The guy might as well have had sleeve garters and a green visor on. I mean, it really was antiquated. And it was, we were getting a loan from the big bank. It was actually the biggest lender in the country. And they wanted more paperwork and more and we had to fax it to them for months. It was a terrible experience. Fast forward, we're in 2017 now, and we've got Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans, the number two lender in the country, but definitely the best lender in the country. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. If you look at the website, you'll see all those J.D. Power Customer Satisfaction Awards year after year, number one in mortgage origination. That's what we're doing here. And now I think better than ever because it's entirely online with Rocket Mortgage. You could do it on your phone and it's so fast you could do it at an open house. And before you leave, you could show the realtor we're approved. We could buy this house if we wanted to. Rocket Mortgage makes it completely transparent too. In fact, you don't have to go through piles of paper or work or, you know, go up into the attic to get your pay stubs, your bank statements. They have partnerships with all the financial institutions. So they've got your information. You don't have to do anything. Based on your income, assets, and credits, they will crunch the numbers, and within minutes, they will give you the loan options for which you qualify. You pick the one that's right for you, the term, the rate. It's fully transparent. You'll understand everything that's happening. It happens fast, and you'll know you're getting the right mortgage for you. So instead of just kind of going along for the ride next time, this is probably the biggest purchase you make in your life. Go to rocketmortgage.com/twit2. That's rocketmortgage.com/twit. And the number 2, equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states at MLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030. Rocket Mortgage. Apply simply, understand fully, and mortgage confidently. RocketMortgage.com/twit2. I know you're not buying a house right now. Bookmark it, okay? Bookmark it in your phone. That way you'll know when the time comes. You'll be ready to go. Speaking of ready to go, there's no point in continuing this show much longer because Game of Thrones this is the last episode of the season, right? Mm-hmm. Am I right? Am I wrong? I
believe you were right.
And then they're going to have another season next year, which they haven't even started filming, and then it's over for good. 73 hours. Oh, wow. Benioff, one of the creators, said, I'm making a 73-hour movie. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it feels like that too, by the way. Anyway, I don't want to keep you from your Game of Thrones. So let's just see. First of all, do we have a CEO? Nope. Nothing to say here. Nothing going on. Okay. See, Mark, you could have come to the show.
Let's see what Kara has to say.
What's Kara saying? Anything? Good news. We had mentioned that the U.S. Department of Justice had asked DreamHost for every single IP address from everybody who visited an anti-Trump website. This was a website that was created, disruptj20.org, to protest at the inauguration day, January 20th. Get it, J20. Mm-hmm. 1.9 million visitors, and the DOJ wanted everybody. DOJ has backed down. Oh, we didn't really want that. No, we didn't really want that. DreamHost, congratulations. Thank you. DreamHost decided not to comply with the July 12th warrant. They said it was overly broad, and I think they would have gone to court to defend that, but the prosecutors amended their request, saying that while the government wants information on subscribers, it's not interested in data logs containing information about visitors. Hey, give us the information, but we'll put aside anything that doesn't involve rioters. You know, that's problematic. That is very problematic. U.S. Attorney's Office in Washington says the website was used to recruit and organize hundreds of people who rioted. 200 people were charged. 19 people have pled guilty. But honestly, visiting the website, that's not a crime. And it's really chilling that they wanted all that information. They've backed down a little bit. State Supreme Court, good news. Now, this is only a state Supreme Court, but in Massachusetts says digital cameras can't be searched without a warrant. It's kind of a strange case. A robbery suspect apprehended. They searched his backpack. They found a digital phone. Looked at the phone and discovered a photo of the suspect next to a gun, later determined to have been stolen. He got convicted for stolen property and carrying a firearm without a license. He said the defendant challenged it, saying, you know, most of this information you got from going through my camera phone.
Did you have a warrant for it?
Did you have a warrant? No. Mm-hmm. The state of Massachusetts said, well, the Riley decision, which was a decision blocking this kind of thing for cell phones, doesn't apply because digital cameras, I guess it wasn't a cell phone, I guess it was a digital camera, mm-hmm. lacking the ability to function as computers are not analogous to cell phones for Fourth Amendment purposes. Well, the court said, no. So digital cameras and cell phones, at least in the state of Massachusetts, protected against unlawful search and seizure. Weird story. You've probably been following the arrest of Marcus Hutchins. He's a white hat hacker the Department of Justice is accusing of writing malware on very thin evidence. There was a defense fund created. And, I got to say, the internet sucks. According to the lawyer who managed the fund, at least $150,000 of the money collected for the defense fund came from fraudulent sources, illegal credit cards. And since he can't figure out which is legit and which isn't, he's refunding everything, and Marcus no longer has a defense fund. We've been covering this story on Security Now if you want to know more information about this. We don't know what Marcus did or didn't do, but it sure looks a little fishy, the DOJ, as has happened before, kind of overstepping their bounds, going after a guy who, Steve Fields appears, didn't do anything wrong. DJI is going to have to ground your Spark. Did you buy? I almost bought a Spark. I'm glad I didn't now. You have to get a firmware update. Apparently, Sparks were falling from the sky. And if you have a Spark and you don't update the firmware by September 1st, it won't fall from the sky. It won't even go into the sky. It'll just stop working entirely. I didn't know they could do that. Install the firmware by September 1st or your drone will not take off. Anything else? There's so many stories, and we didn't get to all of them. But I don't want to keep you much longer.
Actually, Leo, I have a question for you.
Yes.
How does your maybe don't kill the animals technology stance stand up to the shark drones off of the coast?
I love that. That's not killing them; it's just discovering them. I love this because it shows how far machine learning has gone. Mm-hmm. As you might imagine. Off the beaches of Australia, great whites are a problem. It's, I think, the number two shark bite capital after the U.S. Mm-hmm. But so They have shark spotters, but shark spotters only do, they are only about 20 to 30% accurate. So they have trained cameras to recognize sharks. They're putting them on drones. They'll be used with a human assist, but they're 90% accurate with the machine learning compared to the humans of 20 to 30%. So in a move that would really thrill Dr. Evil, shark detecting drones, no lasers,
yes,
are going to patrol Australian beaches. Mm-hmm. Bravo. And that keeps the sharks out of trouble, too.
Yeah.
Oh, look, it's a shark. There's a shark. It also can tell the difference between a shark and a dolphin, a shark, a man-eating shark, and a not, and a yeah. woman-eating shark. Mm-hmm. What? No, there's no difference.
Not all sharks.
Not all sharks. Only some sharks. and that's, I think, going to wrap this up. Mm-hmm. Previously.tv, I look forward to reading your stuff there.
Thank you.
Are you a Game of Thrones fan? You aren't, are you?
Not
You're
really.
Not.
No, I'm sorry.
Do you not even watch it?
I do tune in.
If you
very
get behind, forget it.
But you know, look, there's an entire TV recap industry out there, and there are podcasts devoted to
oh,
it.
There
so
are.
Even if I skip it,
that's true.
I feel pretty confident about it.
You're writing about Veronica Mars.
I'm not personally. I haven't written for the site in a couple of months.
Oh, okay.
But
I can't believe anybody's writing.
I
about
I am
Veronica
about
Mars.
To launch a feature with a partner on. Next month. So I'm
nice. What will
that.
You be talking about?
We are hoping to revisit Emmy awards from the past 20 years to see who really deserved those awards.
Oh, I love that.
Who on now that we have the benefit of hindsight, who really got lucky?
Oh,
so.
I love that. Also, editor in chief of something a little more serious, mm-hmm. the super site for Windows, winsupersite.com. Paul Theroux's old site. Mm-hmm. Great to have you aboard there.
Thank this you. Is, it's a pleasure. I really enjoyed this.
Yeah. Lisa Schmeiser. And where can we find you on Twitter?
L Schmeiser.
L do you do it?
S-C-H. I do, yes.
L?
S-C-H-M-E-I-S-E-R.
You shouldn't you be like, I don't
oh,
know.
Oh, you misspelled it. L-S-C-H.
Yeah, I know I did.
Yes, it's that German. It's the German with the four consonants in a row.
S-C-H. I left out the H.
Yeah, it happens.
It's fun to say, though. Mm-hmm. Schmeiser.
Yep.
Sounds like the late Jerry Lewis. Schmeiser.
Oh, yeah.
Ivan Vliven. Is that you?
That's
as a little
me as,
kid?
Yes.
In a Klan robe?
No, this is Princess oh. Leia. Oh, my
Sorry.
God.
I should have recognized the cinnamon buns.
Yes, the cinnamon buns are right there. It's Princess Leia.
Okay, I was teasing. Of
That's
course
my
not.
My Halloween costume,
I'm
monster.
Glad you were horrified. Horrified by the thought. I love it. Catch her yep. on the Uncomparable mm-hmm. as well. It's great to have you as always. Harry. Mm-hmm. Harry McCracken of the Technologizer. You can follow him on Twitter at Technologizer. Oh, no, you're
Twitter,
not.
Twitter, Harry McCracken.
But Instagram at
Instagram Technologizer.
Technologizer. And, of course, Reed is writing at Fast Company. Yep. We had a great studio audience. People, a bunch of wimps.
Yep.
And I say that with love in my heart. The wimps are, it stands for what? Web? Internet Media Professionals. Mm-hmm. Don't go to wimp.com, go to beawimp.org. And many of them were here today. Is this the whole wimp group?
It's quite a crowd.
Mm-hmm. No. We got a lot of people. Thank you for coming. I really appreciate this. Also, from Brazil and Arlington, Virginia, and all over the country. If you want to be in our studio audience, we love it when you're here. And notice the entire front row is available. Just
everyone's
like school. Fun. Nobody sits in the front. Two people sat in the front. They don't even know each other. They sat in the front. No, that's a joke from before the show. If you want to be here, email tickets at twit.tv. Please do email it so we know how many people are going to come and we can be prepared to greet you and the guard won't shoot you when you come in the door. Email tickets at twit.tv. No, he is there with a gun, but he's not going to shoot anybody. I promise. He's for our protection. I don't know. That really brought the whole thing down. I shouldn't have said anything. It's not a gun. It's a taser. It's practically non-lethal.
Mm-hmm.
You also can watch the show on the live stream. You don't have to come here. Just go to twit.tv/live. No guns involved at all. And if you're there, you should join us in the chat room so you can talk back. irc.twit.tv. Now, if you're not available during our broadcast, 5 or 6 p.m. Sundays Pacific. That's 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 2200 UTC. You can always get the show on demand after the fact on our website, just like all our shows. Twit.tv is the website. Or, you know, subscribe at Pocket Casts or Stitcher or TuneIn, whatever app you use. Subscribe, and that way you'll get every single episode the minute it's done, fresh off the turntable. We put them on vinyl, right? That's how we do it. Thank you for being here. We'll see you next time. Another Twit is in the can. Bye-bye, everybody.
This is so much fun.
It's fun!